Hello, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Underground. Today is June 14th, 2024. Thank you so much for joining me, folks, to discover the truth beneath the surface. As always, I really do appreciate everybody out there taking the time to listen. And tonight, I have a really special treat for my audience. This is a conversation that I've been waiting for a very long time. Lieutenant Colonel Ricardo Bossi is with us. This is a gentleman that I have the utmost respect for. We're going to talk about his background. He's going to introduce himself to the audience. I'm sure that most of you out there who follow my channel are aware of his work, but it is a great honor to have you on the platform. Welcome.
Mate, absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much. And it's a privilege for me because you are one of the best in the business. And I mean that, and there's a lot out there, but I love your work and not just the work you do, the way you do it. You are a man amongst men, and I mean it. You are showing men how to move forward with an open heart and a courageous attitude. So it's a privilege to be here. Thanks, mate.
My goodness. I mean, hearing those types of compliments from you, I have to say it just blows me away. We were chatting for a few minutes before we hit the record button, and already I was kind of like speechless because, you know, this is the first time that you and I have ever even had any kind of conversation or words at all. And to have that kind of that rapport, that feeling of connection right off the bat is pretty amazing. So I think this is going to be a great conversation. I'm really looking forward to it, like I said. So let's go ahead and get rolling. Now, because this is our first discussion, I always like to open it up with a little bit of background. Even though I know you've been on many, many podcasts, certainly you have your own channel on Rumble. A lot of folks out there might be familiar with your story, but there are probably many who haven't heard your background. So tell us a little bit about your military career, how you kind of, I mean, I don't want to make you tell us your whole life story, but I know you were a lieutenant colonel in the Special Forces in Australia, and eventually you ended up starting the Australia One Party and became ultimately a major figure, one of the finest voices in this movement, as far as I'm concerned. So give us a little bit of a snapshot of Lieutenant Colonel Ricardo Bossi and how you got to be here today.
Yeah, I'd love to. In fact, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back a bit just to set the scene because people meet people and say, oh, well, you know, he's a Special Forces colonel. Gee, wow, he was born that way, wasn't he? Chewing gravel and shooting thunderbolts. No. My mother and father, let's just really quickly, because there's a reason behind I'll tell this story. My mother and father came out from Italy after World War II. I'm 64. I was born in 1960. They came out as a couple of teenagers on board a ship to Australia. Dad's family got off in Melbourne. My mother's family got off in Sydney, two of the capital, state capitals. But they'd met on board and they liked each other. But in those days, you know, it was all very, very hallmark, let's say, the relationship.
Yeah.
And they parted company with their families. They eventually got together. But they arrived in 51, barely a word of English between them. Before the end of the decade was out, my mother's English was BBC perfect. It was just, it was accent free. And she and my father married, had their first daughter, their first child, and had initiated the first non-English language radio program in Australia. And it wasn't as a commercial venture with government assistance. This was just them as a couple of kids saying, look, we got a lot of new Australians coming out after the war of all nationalities. So what can we do? So let's try to integrate these people into this new country, which is very challenging compared to Europe. Even the sky was a different colored blue. It was a tough continent. This is a hard country to love. It takes everything from you and gives you a little back. And so they did that. And that was just an extraordinary achievement for 1959. Because, you know, way back then, olive oil, for example, was considered a pharmaceutical product. You can only buy it at the local pharmacy. It wasn't for salad dressing. Now, in Europe it was, but Australia was, oh, no, this is Australia, mate. You boil your meat and you put a couple of veg on it and that's dinner. So the fact that they, you know, they've got to go to the chemist to get some olive oil for their salad was just, it was another planet.
That's crazy.
But what they did for us was brilliant. They eventually had 8 children. I was number 2, first boy. And they gave us an example of what it is to serve the people. And that was just inculcated into us, not by lectures, but by their example, what they did. Mm-hmm. And so I just ate that up. And I always knew I was going to be in the military. As a little boy, I knew why I was put on the planet. I'm one of those lucky guys. I'm here to fight. Fight for innocence. Fight for the good. To put myself between danger and those being threatened. And so I had a very clear idea exactly how I was going to do it. Well, I'm still doing it now. But that was it. So that was the environment in which we grew up. Service to the people. To put yourself last. to think of yourself less and to think of the others more. And so that's it's in us. It's in our family's DNA. So fast forward, join the army, 24 years. As you said, ended up a lieutenant colonel in special ops, having served in the Special Air Service Regiment, First Commando Regiment, mechanized infantry, light infantry, you know, staff postings in headquarters, instructional postings, recruit training battalions, for example, just brilliant work there. So a really broad experience of the military, as well as the not just the pointy and not just the shooting, but the administrative and the support behind that. And it was the weirdest career. You couldn't plot my postings. But in retrospect, you know, the big fella upstairs, he knows exactly what experiences you've got to have to prepare you for what's coming. So I'm watching my career bounce in seemingly illogical places, but then now years later, I'm drawing upon every one of those experiences, and I go, yeah, I know how to do that. Click, click, I know that. Yeah, no problem. Mm-hmm. So it's just a beautiful journey in retrospect. At the time, frustrating as all get out.
But, I can imagine.
So, yeah. So 2004, retired from the military just a few months short of 25 years. In the meantime, though, I had started some businesses. So, you know, during the week, I'm Colonel Bosey, and then nights and weekends, I'm writing business plans and getting business angels to put money into business ideas. And, you know, on two occasions, $100,000 from two separate business angels on two separate business ideas. So my transition to civilian life was quite simple. It's very tough for military people because we're institutionalized. Yeah. That transition for me is very simple. So I got out in 2004, set up my own consulting firm, Lionheart Australasia, and consulted. And I made a conscious effort to separate myself from the military rather than depend upon old contacts. I needed to stand on my two legs in a genuinely commercial marketplace without leaning on old friendships. I had to cut into business and prove my worth. And the first day when I really got the job, and it was a case of I've got the job, which was great, but I was standing at the airport ready to fly out, and it struck me. They don't want just somebody. They want me, which was different because when you're in the military, you know, we need some SF support. They'll just pick somebody who's got and fly them in. So they don't want you specifically. They just want a special forces rep. And when I realized, wow, they want me, that's I sort of smiled and went, okay, I think I'm achieving what I wanted to achieve. And there's a theme throughout this, that story of you've got to be self-reliant, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. And that self-reliance is a faith in yourself that you are worth something. And the reason I say that is because we are told from every angle that we're all worth nothing, whether it's a bad parent or a sibling or some imbecile at work or the TV shows that keep putting you down and you've got to keep shrugging this stuff off. And I often say to myself in this journey, do I really have to put up with this shit? And then I hear Jesus Christ's words in my ear whisper very gently, says, I did. And I go, yeah, okay, got it. Thanks for that. He just gently recalibrates me. Yeah. And it's just that's why I love him so much, because he's just the best exemplar. Just to follow on a human male level, you just look at the guy and you go, yeah, okay, he did it, so mm-hmm. I'm sure I can. Anyway, so consulting on leadership strategy and innovation. Also consulted internationally to the gas and oil industry on business continuity in Philippines, Thailand, Pakistan, Italy. You know, just fantastic fly in, fly out. That's just normal for me. Received a phone call from a friend of mine and said, there's a job opening up in the United Arab Emirates, if you're interested. It's a fly-in, fly-out. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And it was writing doctrine for their Special Operations Command. So the team would go in, we'd have a look around, and we'd come back, write the doctrine, send it over. And eventually that transitioned into a permanent contract. So I spent 5 years in the United Arab Emirates working in wow. Sharjah, three of the Emirates, Sharjah, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And it was just a brilliant experience, incredible. Took the bride over. We had our two daughters there, and I'm grateful we had our two daughters there in Abu Dhabi at the Corniche Hospital. It was the best of best medical facilities. We had top flight people, better than in Australia, without a doubt, much better. And so we had a great experience. After 5 years, both were out, came back to Oz, and there's nothing like leaving home to come back and find out what a mess it really is.
Yeah.
Because while we were over in the Middle East for that period of time, I had a great time. Brilliant people, the Emiratis, just perfection. And just on that, so in case people are wondering, why do you help the Emiratis out in a military sense? Because I was a consultant to their Special Operations Command. We trained up the troops. I wrote high-level strategy development framework. So, here's the framework to follow if you want a strategy. Capability development frameworks. Well, if you want a new capability, here's the path you must follow. So I did that level work, and then the Commander Special Ops, then Brigadier Obeid, another quality guy, just superb. He would have been a top officer in any military. Anyway, he called me and said, "Look, Rick, I want you to make our people like the SAS." And that's going to be a tough call because it's the people that make the difference. The training is, you can give them the training, but you've got to have the people. But we took them to a height they'd never reached before. And I was told by all the old hands there, the other contractors, you're going to have a tough ride here. And we had the French, the Americans, the Brits, French, American, Brits, and what was the other one? There were five nationalities as well as the Australians. And we did it. We got them. We trained them up, took them to the Afghan, got them outside the wire doing jobs they'd never done before, at a level they'd certainly never done before. In fact, at one point, they're actually leading combined Emirati-US patrols, which is just unheard of. It was fantastic. Came back, and it was a mess here in Oz. And so my wife and I looked at each other, and we sort of re-establishing ourselves here commercially in this country. So the name meant something and the company meant something, I could get jobs. But we realized very quickly the place was just awful. And it started even at the airport. Surly, badly dressed customs official. And, I felt like reaching across the counter and ripping his throat out, the insolence in which he was talking to a complete stranger. And you've got to hand it to idiots that start challenging people that don't know who they are or what their capabilities are anyway. I kept my cool and said, "This is just terrible. I've entered third world countries where the people are more polite and effective and efficient." And then it just got worse. Kids went to school. The curriculum was crazy. A nice Catholic school just down the road turned out to be just another globalist place for re-indoctrination of children into the weirdest of all possible things. Pull them out of that, started homeschooling. And then I said, "We've got to do something." The old saying, "Shut up or do something about it." So we did something. I joined up with a party called the Australian Conservatives, which was a new breakaway party from our alleged Conservative Party, which isn't conservative at all. As you know, two wings of the same bird, same problem. Red, blue, both awful. That experiment failed. He dissolved the party, and we said, my wife and I said, "That's it. We've got to do something." So we hopped in the car, and I wrote a terms of reference for a constitutional committee. I wrote a terms of reference for the development committee, policy development committee for a new party, because we knew we had to do something and nobody was doing it the right way. Nobody. And we just felt compelled to do so. So I wrote that up, and then we embarked on a 6,355 kilometer tour up the east coast of Australia and back down again. So from Sydney, all the way up to Townsville and back. 29 days, 21 meetings and presentations. Two little girls in the back of this awful bongo van, this crappy little low cost, non-air conditioned in the height of summer Australia. Oh, they are just heroes, those two. And we did that, and that was the foundation of Australia One. Because, as you can see behind me, it was very clear. It's not about left and right; it's about right and wrong. It's really simple, and the message resonated. We attract people from all walks of life. Unlike, you've got the farmers' party, or you've got the truckies' party, you've got the workers' party, you've got the rich people. No, we're looking for something very different, and I can show you the slide just to show you our intention. And I'm sorry if this is taking a while, but it really sets the scene, because there are people trying to emulate what we're doing in Oz, around the world with Australia One, and it is unique.
Yeah, you have
And so
screen
we,
share. If you'd like to pull up a slide, you can feel free to do that.
sure. Let me just bring this one up. And this, here we go. And what's different about it? It is the most difficult way to do it, but it's the only way that we can. Tell me when you've got that up. Here we
That'd
go.
be good. Yep, there you go.
Okay. In the military, when you start an operation, I'm talking high level stuff, not kicking in a door and taking out the bad guys. That's tactical. This is a strategic view. What's your intention? It comprises three parts: purpose, method, end state. Purpose, what you're going to do. Method, how you're going to do it. End state, what the world looks like when you finish. It's a set of metrics by which you can measure success or otherwise. And this is done at the national strategic level. And it's important to get it right. But what's interesting is your purpose first, end state second, and then method reveals itself once you've done your analysis. And this is what we came up with. Really simple. This is way back when. Purpose to save Australia. So it doesn't matter how you do it. Remember, if you forget all the hows, you know, remember the purpose, and that's you're going to save the country. The method was to create a moral political party that empowers Australians to reach their highest individual potential so that collectively all can participate in the reformation of Australia. Now, that is the single most difficult way of doing it, because the normal deal is divide everybody into their self-interested groups, right? Labor, capital, farmers, doctors, whatever. Get somebody on top to control that group, and then we can force them into our organization. And now that's the way the Masonic filth have been doing it forever. Mm-hmm. Well, we're doing it differently. I said it the other night. I reminded everybody. We're creating a moral political party, which means we're looking for moral people first. So we don't care what job you've got, but you're moral, you're in. And we've defined moral. And this, with this statement comes an immense responsibility to provide definitions for people. Because you can ask everybody, moral? Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to rape three-year-olds? Yeah, I said so, because the Talmud said I can. You know, whoa, slow down. A moral people, this is the way we've defined it. A moral people is a group who agree the difference between right and wrong, and then think, speak, and act to advance the right and eradicate the wrong. So that is just so pregnant with important meaning. So you've got to agree right and wrong. So I don't care what religion you are, but if you think having sex with a three-year-old is okay, we are going to have some serious problems. So don't tell me you're a moral Muslim or a moral Jew or a moral whatever if under your morality, because we're creating a sovereign nation state, and there has to be a coherence, and there has to be a confluence of ideas and agreements and thoughts. And so this, everybody's got a job. Everybody's got a job. No more outsourcing it to the local party boss. That's not happening. That's why this is so tough. And the end state, and this is when we know we've succeeded. Australia's a moral, sovereign, self-reliant Christian Western democracy, which is economically powerful, militarily intimidating, politically free, culturally vibrant, and socially cohesive. Now that's, we came up with that back in 2018, I think. And I keep reminding all the A1 people to burn that into their psyche, because that's the prism through which we look at everything we do. So when I asked a question on policy, for example, what's your policy on this? And it's very simple. If it contributes to this, it's in. If it deviates from any of these points, I can unequivocally say, no, we don't do that. We just don't do it. So go find another organization. So anyway, that's what we were creating.
Excellent.
And we've been working at that now for, God, many years. I mean, I started this journey 17 years ago, believe it or not, and I'll tell you about that in a minute if you want to know. But then we developed into this this organization now that's slowly, and it is a very slow movement. If you want to go fast, you go alone. If you want to go far, you go together. And so it's been a very slow movement to grow it, because we've been penetrated by everybody. Nobody wants us to succeed. In fact, other than our favorite ex-communist John Wilson, and there's a name you should interview one day, nobody else in this country is actually real. Our freedom movement is utterly penetrated, fully penetrated. And they're all paid off by the Masons, the Jesuits, the Mormons, you name it. They're all working for somebody else. They're trying to fracture Australia into 1,000 little pieces. They're trying to demoralize the people. And so we're this lone voice, quite proudly, a lone voice in the wilderness, organizationally speaking. There are good individuals out there, don't get me wrong. But in terms of with that forward-looking view for the country, and here's something you can really hang your hat on, folks. This genuine grassroots movement, and we're going to push as much political power down to the lowest level we possibly can, because the last thing we want is the people that represent the people is to be answering to us. They don't answer to us, because if they answer us, they're not representing the people. So we have mechanisms in place to make sure that they are constantly responsive to the people, not responsive to the party, which is another one of those obvious problems. But anyway, and so we've been moving ahead with this process. We've been fighting off a lot of infiltrators, a lot of attacks. And we expect that. I mean, you don't expect to move into this space and expect a free ride.
Certainly.
And yeah, steel sharpens steel. So every time they attack us, it's an opportunity for us to get better and better. And the more they attack, the better and stronger we become. So here we are today. It's an extraordinary privilege. We have an international reputation as a force for good. We are better known than any other political party in the country, which I think is just funny.
Amazing.
Because people recognize it, and it's just such a privilege to be here, and we are looking forward to what's coming next.
Well, I love how you broke that down. It's just so, I mean, they're lofty ideals, but they're also very simple and they're very straightforward. And I love how you basically just laid it out. These are our ideals, and either the policies align with them or they deviate from them. And keeping it very, very simple, because you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what they try to do. They always try to introduce all these different nuances and all, well, what about this? And what about that? Or maybe we should think about this. And like you said, it's all with the end game of division in mind. So the fact that you guys are doing that, such amazing work in Australia to unify the people, it's really no wonder that it's the fastest growing, most recognizable party in the country. And I can only imagine that's gonna grow like gonna spread like wildfire as we continue to move along this path. But one of the things, you know, I have to say about you is the first time I heard you, first of all, you're extremely articulate. You're a man of, it's pretty obvious you're a man of military precision. This is actually, I think, the first time I've ever felt underdressed for a podcast that I knew I was going to, but that's okay. You know, you're an amazing guy. You lead by example, and you're clearly a fighter. That's one of the things that I resonate with you. Now, I personally don't have a military background, but when I hear you talking, I actually saw you on with my friends Dave and Mark on News Treason, and you know, just asserting yourself as a man. And you know, that's something that I think that I love about you, the fact that you're not afraid to just assert yourself as a man and to talk about, you know, men being men, and that's exactly what this world needs. And certainly we, you know, we can talk about that, but one of the things that I really wanted to mention as we kind of branch into our broader conversation today is the podcast you did with Jan Halper Hayes that inspired my coffee chat. And we were speaking about this a little bit before the show, on the hero's journey and your ability to be so concise, to pack so much meaning in only a 3 or 4 minute soundbite has always amazed me. But this is one, I mean, one of them actually, I'll take a step back for a second, that really got me. It went viral. I'm sure you probably are aware, is when somebody asked you the simple question, you know, who are the White Hats? And you basically just laid it out in about I don't know, maybe 5 minute clip. And it was just absolutely brilliant. And you did the same thing with the hero's journey. And it so deeply resonated with me because you know, you took a very simple slide and, a universal concept, and you were able to tell my life story in a matter of 3.5 minutes. And I was completely blown away. I was driving up to New Hampshire for a little getaway. And as it turns out, Lieutenant Colonel actually shared with me that he listened to it, that his wife passed it along to him, and he had quite a positive reaction to it. So I wanted to bring that up briefly because I know that this is something that all of us are engaged in at some level. I think everybody that's been, what I like to say, pre-awakened has been on this hero's journey. And what's amazing is that you can go through, and so many of us have gone through a majority of our lives, and we haven't even realized. I mean, you actually were talking about, you know, sort of connecting the dots with your past, you know, some of the stuff that you experienced when you were younger that you were like, why did I have to do this? Or that didn't make any sense. And all of a sudden you fast forward to, you know, 2017 and beyond, this journey that we're on. And it's almost like God is just constantly connecting the dots and making you see the relevance of everything that happened in your life. And I think when I was listening to you, I just went back and I went back to the beginning, you know, when you talked about a change event. And you know, everything's going along just kind of swimmingly, and you know, you got your ups and downs, but nothing really major to speak of. And then all of a sudden there's that change event where nothing is ever the same. And it just, I mean, honestly, it's kind of making me a little emotional now because I just had such a powerful effect on me. So I was hoping, for the benefit of my audience, maybe for the people that perhaps haven't seen that clip, I did share it on my channel because I thought it was just absolutely brilliant. And I, of course, followed it up with a coffee chat because I was so inspired to do so. But can you talk a little bit about that? And I think there was also a little bit of information that you had wanted to share, maybe to augment that basic idea. So tell us a little bit about
Sure.
the hero's journey, your amazing breaking this down.
Would you like to play that little clip? Because I think it's worth getting in there for those who haven't seen it, to
Sure,
give
I
it
can go ahead and
context.
pull it up.
Yeah, if you pull that clip up and then just when it's done, just freeze frame it on the actual diagram. So and then I can talk to the diagram and people understand what we're saying.
Sure, that's a great idea. I actually probably should have had that keyed up already, but just give me 1 second here and we'll get it. And let me go ahead and share my screen. Oh, wait a minute. I don't know if I did it with sound. I've made this mistake before. Let me go ahead and make sure I did it with sound. Okay, here we go. Share sound. Yep, I was about to do it without. All right. Okay, do you got it? You see it?
Yep, we're good. Yep.
Here we go. Might do an ad first. I'm not sure. Hopefully not.
No, we're good. It's rolling. Need no voice.
Oh, no sound.
No sound. Yep.
Volume. By and large, here you are, you're bubbling along in an ordinary life. You have your ups and downs, but by and large, things seem to progress according to some sort of a plan. Now, that plan may change occasionally because of events, unexpected events, but by and large, you've got a grip of reality as you see it, and you can make some sense of the world. Then a change event happens, completely unexpected change event. And as I said, this could be anything and everything in your life, something unexpected. There's a period of either denial or refusal to accept that life has changed. And we hang on, and we've all been there, as I said, we hang on with white knuckle grip, hoping that if we just hang on long enough, things will return to the way they were. But sometimes that's not the case. And we go into a period of collapse. And if anybody's in through a divorce or the death of a loved one, you'll understand what I mean. And we fall. And then we hit rock bottom. And rock bottom hurts. And if we've never been there before, the first time you hit it, it hurts a lot. Then as you get older, you realize, well, I've hit this place before. I have the tools, I have the skills, I'm sure I can move on. And so we do, we move on. And we go through the period called the test. And this is a period where we try everything that we think will work and it doesn't. Then we try things that we think might work and they don't. And then we start trying stuff that we have no idea what's going to happen next because we have just run out. Because what's happened is we found ourselves in a place without skills, without resources, without attitudes, perspectives that are necessary. We have all the old ones, but they no longer serve us in this new world. And that's why it's a very testing place. High highs, low lows. And if you've ever known a friend or you've gone through a divorce, you'll know exactly what it's like. 1 minute you're up, 1 minute you're down, then you're up, then you're down. And it becomes a very challenging period. But then after a period of time, if we're paying attention, we get a realistic insight into the future. Because now we have an experience. Now we have new tools. Now we have new insights, new perspectives. And we begin the journey back up. Then there's a period of real growth. And now we're becoming something new. The old us has died in a very real sense. In a very real sense. Not physically, maybe, but emotionally, mentally, psychologically, and spiritually. And that period of growth allows us to become something new, something wonderful, something more capable. And then we're home. We return home. But we are never the same. And that's the origin, I guess, of the expression, you can never go home. When you go home, you are now very different. And if we do this right, and that's the purpose of today's talk with Dr. Jan, if we do this right as individuals, as families, as communities, and as nations, we will return home, but we will be more powerful, more capable, more self-reliant than we ever were before. So that's the journey. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Well, Jan's going to be doing most of the heavy lifting, thankfully. I'm going to draw and lean heavily on her incredible experience. And so there we go. That's the journey, folks.
Amazing.
Okay, if you can just shoot back to the screen and freeze on the actual line, because I want people to...
Sure.
We'll raise that.
2024. Thank you so much.
Oh, I think it just automatically started playing my coffee chat. Look at that. Hold on a second. Imagine that. Okay, hold on. Let me go back, Ricardo. Give me one second here.
You're right. Not a problem. You should see our videos. The production values aren't number one priority, I can tell you. We drop out. We miss slides. Things fall over, but the message somehow gets through.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. So now, first of all, credit where credit's due. It was one of those happy coincidences. Thank you, God. Back in the early 2000s, where out of the blue, this consulting team called Davis and Dean out of the US came to Australia and was, I guess, maybe trying to generate some work out of Oz. And they said, you know, please attend this and let us know if you think it was worthwhile. Well, it was so worthwhile, I got my whole team to go do what they were doing. So Davis and Dean are the source of this. The actual hero's journey was described by Joseph Campbell, American writer. And it's been the basis of just about every movie you've seen without even knowing it. The most common one is Star Wars, Luke Skywalker. He's he's helping his uncle, who's a moisture farmer. He's got that typical young man's enthusiasm to leave home and to test himself against the world. And all young men know that feeling. And then there's a massive change event where his aunt and uncle are killed. And away he goes, and he meets the archetypes that you meet in this journey. You meet the mentor in the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi. You meet evil in the form of Darth Vader. And it's this whole journey that he had to go through. Now, we go through this as individuals, all of us, men and women, children, all the same. And we use it in change management and consulting so you can sort of shorten the journey and make it less deep, make it a shallower journey and get them from where they are to where they need to be. There's a whole process to go through that. And that's great. But here's the thing. In your life, if you're Luke Skywalker, you don't have any cares. This is brilliant. Hey, I can.
Well, we've been fortunate up until this point. We haven't had you freeze. So I was anticipating this was going to happen at some point.
You were conversing. All these lines are now superimposed upon each other. So you might have a great spouse. Hang on, I think we've got an unstable internet connection.
Yeah, maybe back it up like 10 seconds. I think we got frozen for about 10, 15 seconds.
Okay, so as a single guy like Luke Skywalker, your world changes and you're free to travel this journey on your own. But in the real world, we have spouses, we have children, we have imbecilic bosses, we have jobs we don't like, we have the rubbish, the trash won't be collected on time because the council isn't working and it's piling up in the front. All these little things. Now, imagine that line superimposed maybe a dozen times in different stages. So while this is going well, something's going badly, and then that's going well, and then something else is going badly. And what's happening and what's going to happen very shortly, and this is where people have difficulty, so listen carefully. You'll find that it becomes too much simply because you can't juggle every ball that gets thrown at you. Now, as a professional special forces guy, I can tell you, you never turn up saying, oh, sorry, boss, I couldn't do the job. I mean, that's just never accepted. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen that way. You make it happen, come hell or high water. Well, in this journey, you're going to have to start dropping things off the back of the truck. You really are. It's just a matter you have to focus on. Now, to get through this, when you've got all these lines that are now in conflict with each other, what's truly important take center stage, and we all must make that decision. What's truly important to us? And, you know, my wife and I, we laugh. We had a job, a lifestyle where, particularly when we're in the Middle East, we could fly to Rome for a pizza, fly to Athens for a souvlaki, go to Vienna for a schnitzel, you know, drop into Cairo to visit the pyramids. And you'd do it for a weekend.
It's awesome.
And then, and that's a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
But when we came back here, we realized we had to do something. That is now gone. We've been through periods where we've literally only fed the family because somebody kindly walked up and shook my hand. There was a few $100 in there, and I thought, great, we're eating them tonight. And so it's been a very that rock bottom I was telling you about. You know, bouncing along on the bottom with no money. Now we're okay at times because courtesy of the generosity of people, and that wonderful lifestyle is now well and truly gone. But we don't care. It didn't matter. We let that fall by the wayside. You know, I've got to bless my wife here. Jesus, we are as one on this. There is not a sliver of light between us. And had there been, this would not be occurring. And she cares as little for the nonsense of life as I do. We're very focused. We enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. Love it. But the fact is, all these less important things drop off, you know, trips overseas and five-star restaurants. And to the point where we're stitching up old trousers. Now, we'll save money for specific purposes and make a big purchase because we need it, but the little things miss off. And that's what makes this possible. Because that line, like everybody, for me and my wife, had multiple lines. But now it's really simple. It's the country and it's the family and that's our God. And that's it. And I love those you know, God, family, and country. And then the order changes depending on what time of day it is, God, family. And nothing else matters to us. We just don't care. We trust that the rest will be taken care of one way or another. And as I said, we've hit rock bottom so often now, we just go, yeah, we've been here before. And we just jump back up. We don't know we'll be fine. But if we tried to juggle all the mindsets and goals and objectives that I had previously, I'd be driving myself insane. So it's time to simplify, to clarify. And for me, and thankfully for my wife, it is real simple. God, country, family. And we have to win on all three. We can't afford to lose on those ones because it's too important to us. But again, in the final analysis, God wins. You know, that's the final measure. But all the other stuff, gone. So ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to take time because when we watch films, and they're great means for communicating important messages and bad ones too, as we've learned, it always seems easy because the protagonist free of all the encumbrances of life so they can pursue their hero's journey. The rest of us are struggling, doing the dishes, taking out the rubbish and going, oh, crap, I forgot to buy the milk and the kids haven't got milk for breakfast, you know. You know, the glamour of national leadership. I mean, that's the reality of it. And so if you just simplify over the next few days, weeks, months, simplify, folks. Throw out the rubbish. It doesn't matter. Focus on what is profoundly important to you and you'll get through this. And we'll give you a few other tips as we go. But I just wanted to throw that on top to let people know you're not Luke Skywalker. I'm sorry. You're a whole lot busier and a whole lot more challenged because you've got all of his problems. Plus, as I said, spouse, kids, job, wife, money, debts, speeding fines. You know,
the stuff that the movies just conveniently kind of skip over, right?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, so but there you go. Principle is there though, that hero's journey, and I just watching it again, it was amazing to me just hearing the absolute synchronicity with my experience, and I know the experience of literally millions of people around the world who, like I said, never really understood what they were going through. And as I was listening to this, I was thinking to myself, you know, this is so powerful for me because it explains everything about my life. And I imagine my audience is going to feel the same way, but this goes much, it's much even more broad than that. When you talked about, and we can see it here, that the change event, the denial, the refusal, and the collapse, that to me is exactly what's about to happen worldwide. We're going to have some kind of a change event. And certainly, you know, who knows what portion of our conversation tonight is going to be talking about that event, what it might look like. We've been speculating about it. I certainly have for years now. But one way or another, that event is coming. And there are going to be, despite the fact that there is a massive awakening going on right now, we're talking about things that are so horrific that they're difficult to even talk about, much less learn about. And the whole world is going to have to embrace these realities at some level, depending upon how far the white hats go with disclosure and the methods and how they overall choose to present this to the public. I have to imagine that there's been literally decades of planning that's gone into that. But the idea here is that this is something that this journey is going to be something that everybody is going to have to go through as the result of this disclosure. And one of the things that we were touching upon a little bit earlier during our pre-recording conversations, you had talked about the whole concept of when everything goes wrong. And, you know, as I was listening to this, you know, once again, I thought to myself, wow, this is just perfectly aligned. This change event is going to be pretty much synonymous with that concept of everything going wrong or everything suddenly just being flipped upside down. Same reality that you and I and all of our audience members and patriots and anons throughout the world, you know, we already went through this. We already had that change event. We already went through that denial, refusal process, that collapse and so forth, where we just simply don't want to accept the reality as it is. and the rest of the world, the normies, of course, they've been pushing this off, pushing this off, pushing this off. But I get the sense that more and more people on an energetic, spiritual level even can sense that this is coming. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, you know, the idea of what happens when everything goes wrong? Because I think you had some thoughts that you wanted to share on that.
Sure. You don't have to excuse me about 30 seconds. I've got a small imperative meeting on the left, so I'm going to blank myself very quickly.
Sure, yeah. No, I'll go ahead and pause. We'll come right back. All right. So we're going to hold on a second. All right. So we're back now, and Lieutenant Colonel Bosse is going to talk a little bit about when things go wrong. And there's a little clip. I'm not sure how short it is, maybe 5 minutes or something like that. We're going to watch because it really sets the stage very well. Do you want to do a brief little intro, tell folks what they're about to
see? Absolutely. When things go wrong, look, in the military, when you do a military plan, it's not like in the movies. Because in the movies, people go, oh, what do we do now? What do we do? And it's a panic. And that's designed to create tension and attract the audience. But in real life, it's not like that. We go through a painstaking process at the very tactical level called actions on, meaning, right, here's the plan. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to come in here. We're going to do this. We're going to get out there. And then we have actions on. And the guys have to memorize this. And it's a series of statements. If this happens, then we do that. If this happens, then we do this. If this happens, this is when things go wrong. If this goes wrong, we do that. If things go wrong, we do that. And it's quite detailed. It is absolutely detailed. For example, no, I won't go into detail it anyway. We have a list. So we know when it turns to custard, the evacuation agency doesn't turn up. The extraction agency doesn't arrive. What are we going to do? You don't sit and talk about it. You know exactly what you're going to do. You go through the alternate extraction point and then you go to and away you go. But in the movies, they make it look like a panic. Now, things go wrong to the point where it's complete disaster. And so I'm going to show you a video. It's got nothing to do with the military. And I like using non-military videos because military ones have real little practical application in real life because it's not like that. But take from this video the lesson, and I'll confirm it at the end, exactly the point that I wanted you to get from it. When things go wrong, because they will, they're going to go horribly wrong. And you as an adult, we as adults, you still there, Dave? Yeah, good.
Oh yeah, we lost about 10 seconds again. You were saying when us as adults, and then it cut out. Looks like they're messing with the feed big time.
Yep. Where did I drop out?
You were saying something about the last thing you said is like when we're adults, and then it cut out.
Okay. When we're adults, we can't afford to tear our party dresses and clutch our pearls. We have to take action. We expect more of ourselves to step up and meet the challenge. So when things go wrong, it's something we've got to be prepared for. So I'm going to play the video now. It's not military, as I said. Military analogies don't have real application in life. So I always try to use non-military ones. So here we go. When things go wrong. And here we go.
Keith Jarrett's Cologne concert started out as a disaster, but it went on to be the best-selling solo jazz album of all time and the best-selling solo piano album of any genre. The concert took place on the 24th of January, 1975, at Cologne's Opera House. Now, even without any of the drama that would later unfold, the concert was already taking place under unusual circumstances. It was organized by the concert promoter, Vera Brandes, who was then only 17 years old. And given the Opera House was staging an opera earlier that evening, the only time they had available for Keith Jarrett was a starting time of 11:30 p.m. Jarrett was already well known to European audiences, partly through touring with Miles Davis, but also having recorded previous concerts in Europe. So although the Opera House was trying to branch out into new ideas, Jarrett was by no means an unknown figure. Usually during this tour, Keith Jarrett was performing every other night in order to allow time for travelling between concerts. But as this was the only night the Opera House had available, it had to be scheduled the day after another concert in Lausanne. The record label requested that Keith Jarrett be given a flight to Cologne to make transport easier. However, he exchanged his ticket for cash and instead hitched a ride with his producer, Manfred Eicher, for the 500-mile trip. They cashed in the ticket, and they drove with an old Renault 4 all the way from Switzerland. So Keith was completely exhausted by the time they got here. Not only was he exhausted from not having slept at all, but he had such bad back pain that he needed to wear a brace. But the real drama unfolded when he arrived at the Opera House. Keith requested to play on a flagship Bösendorfer Imperial piano. However, when he went out to try the piano, this was not the one given to him. So they looked in the whole opera and they found this tiny little Bösendorfer that was completely out of tune. The upper and the lower octave was wrecked. The black notes in the middle didn't work. The pedal stuck. It was unplayable. Keith Jarrett refused to play. And Vera, the concert promoter, was completely unaware of what had happened because she arrived at the opera house at the same time as Keith. The piano was on the stage already and Keith played a few notes. And then Eicher played a few notes. They didn't say anything. Then after a long silence, Manfred came to me and said, if you don't get another piano, Keith can't play tonight. Vera hurriedly contacted everyone she could think of in Cologne that might be able to supply her with the grand piano needed for that evening. And she did eventually find one. But when the piano tuner arrived and heard about her plan to transport this piano, he told her it was an even worse idea than trying to use the broken one that they already had. Vera begged Jarrett to perform on the broken piano, knowing that given the way things had been organized, it would have been impossible to refund the audience for their tickets. Jarrett reluctantly agreed, and the piano tuner got to work, desperately trying to salvage this piano into something usable. Meanwhile, Vera booked a table for Jarrett and his producer at a nearby Italian restaurant, knowing that a bit of downtime and something to eat was well needed to prepare for the concert. But even this went wrong. Unfortunately, the waiter messed up their order, and so it took ages for their food to arrive. And when it finally did, it was time for them to leave for the concert. Keith Jarrett yet again refused to play. But as he found out the recording engineers were ready to go, he thought it might be worth going ahead just so that he could have a record of it.
We went to probably tell the engineers that they could leave because it was just everything was wrong, except they sold it out. We thought we should send the engineers home. And then at the last minute, no, it's okay. We'll just keep, they're here already. They're set up. And we'll just have a recording for ourselves.
This recording will go on to be the best-selling solo piano album of all time. Amazing. So what is it that makes this performance and this recording so special? Well, of course, it's the music. The entire concert was improvised, and I don't mean he was improvising over some well-known tunes. I mean he sat down and improvised the entire concert. The concert is in two parts and in four sections. Part one is all on its own, and part two is divided into these three sections. What Keith Jarrett did so brilliantly was to take this broken piano and use it to play music that only that piano could have played. He didn't hide away from the faults of the piano. Instead, he embraced them and put them in the music. This is the very essence of improvisation. The concert starts out with just four notes, a gentle and reluctant opening whilst Keith is getting to know the piano, before listening to what it gives back to him and then exploring these ideas further.
I don't think that people recognize what's happening sometimes as an audience member. But if they knew that that we were all being surprised at the same time, including me, by the sounds and having to adapt to them, then beginnings would be even more interesting.
Another great example is how audible these broken pedals are in part two. You might think that if the pedals are broken, then you should avoid them or try and play as quietly as possible. But Keith really embraces these broken pedals and almost uses them in a percussive way. When I was younger, I often used to think, what are these great musicians thinking about as they play? Because, of course, when you're first starting out learning an instrument, there's so much to think about. But, of course, they're not thinking about anything. They're listening in a state of flow, almost like a great conversation. And I doubt there are many better examples of being a great listener than this Cologne concert. Okay, so Keith Jarrett's musicality is incredible, and the story behind the concert is completely unique. But none of this explains why this record has been so successful. I don't think listeners are buying it to hear a broken piano. One of the things that makes this album so special is that it's a live recording. It's an opportunity for the listener to eavesdrop. This concert. Another thing that sets this record apart is that it was recorded in Europe, and Europe has traditionally played a minor role in jazz development, at least compared to the cultural home of jazz that America is. But this performance, having been recorded in Europe, offers a unique perspective on jazz. On the one hand, it's a solo piano performance recorded in an opera house, a very Western sort of classical musical idea. But then there's Keith playing an improvised performance on a broken piano late into the night, which is much more fitting with the tradition of jazz. And so it came to be that this record is almost a cultural crossover between these two musical traditions, especially given the time it was recorded, which was 1975, a time when jazz fusion was very popular. And this record is a fusion between these two musical traditions. It's also remarkably simple and accessible. Just look at the packaging. A simple black and white photo with minimal text. For a pianist and concert promoter, this performance started out as more of a disaster than they could have possibly imagined. But Keith Jarrett and his incredible skill as an improviser meant that he was able to turn this into a truly unique piece of art.
Wow. That is incredible. I never heard that story before.
Yeah, and the album itself, you can hear it online. It's extraordinary. It is beautiful if you're into that sort of music. It's extraordinary.
I have to check it out.
Yeah, I did after I saw that interview by that young man. So what to take from that? Why is that important when things go wrong? Step one, always focus on what your purpose is. A1, save Australia. That we might forget everything else, but save Australia. And if you can remember the whole thing, even better. So we as an organization and as individuals, we're going to be facing this in the next few days, weeks, months, and years. Focus on what you need to do. Focus on what your purpose is. For example, our national coordinator, Sarah Yule, who's found herself elevated to a position well above whatever ever she'd ever think she'd hold, simply because she is so good at what she does. She just applies herself. And to use the expression, she's got a lot of runway in front of her. But her purpose is very clear. It's not following me. It's not following A1. She wants to save children, and she sees A1 as the best means by which we do that, because that's one of our key things, to save the kids. And so this woman, she's got two little kids, husband, every day stresses and strains, and she works something like 20 hours a day regularly, just punching out stuff for Australia One. And as I said, not because she's following me, because she has her purpose. So remember what your purpose is throughout this next period. What is my purpose? And as a tip, start small. I've got to keep myself going. I've got to keep the family going. So let's keep the family intact. Next, what do we do outside the family? What's the next circle which we have to be responsible for? And this is that point I was talking about. Start letting the dumb stuff go. I don't mean just let it go. Your options have weight. It's like baggage. And you've got this baggage train behind you, and it is slowing you down. So lighten your load and focus on those few things that are fundamentally important. In my case, it's real simple. I told you it's God, country, family, God, family, country, depending on on what day it is. But it's really simple. And the rest we don't care about. And there's no more emotion anymore. We've been betrayed so many times by people very close to us, people we considered almost like family, and we've been betrayed. And this is standard for politics.
Yeah.
I doubled over and I couldn't believe I'd been betrayed to this level. But I've betrayed and been betrayed. So I said to myself, well, you've hurt people too. So no judgment here, son. Just, you know, suck it up and get on with it. And so now, even recently, we've been horribly betrayed by people with A1 who are now spreading falsehoods and lies and allegations, all false because we've got the documentation to prove what they're saying is wrong. And so we're no longer upset. It's more curious. We go, well, that was interesting. I didn't expect that to come from them, but they did. And we just move on because it doesn't matter anymore. Do we have to save the country? Yes. Cut them away. It's not callous. It's not insensitive. It's just, we don't have time for it. And we move on. So that's step one. Step two, master your skills. Jarrett made that work because he was a master at his skill, which was to play the piano, and he improvised the entire concert, which is just extraordinary.
Incredible.
But he was able to take nothing and turn it into something. He went, he was with, as the young man said, he was in flow. And you know, that's a very Taoist philosophy as well. When you're in flow, you don't fight. You're in the current, you're in the river, you're flowing down the river, and there's a log in the middle, and just effortlessly flow around the log. You don't sit there and argue with the log. You shouldn't be in the river. Get out of my way. I'm a river. I flow. Just go around. Ignore the problems. So stay in flow, and you're in flow because you are mastering what you're doing. And we do this all the time. We used to get all of us, because it was natural, get frustrated because things weren't working out the way they wanted, and there was delay after delay after delay. And then we realized, hang on a minute, stop fighting it. There's a reason for the delay. It'll reveal itself sometimes weeks later, sometimes months later, sometimes years later, and it has. And now we understand. We've got to stay in flow. And you stay in flow because you can master what you're doing. You know what your objective is, and you know what to do. So you know how to flow around. And this has happened countless times, and I'm sure it's happened to you too as well. You're not sure what's happened, and all of a sudden you're giving a talk or a speech or a program, and it didn't go where you wanted to, but you just found yourself in flow, communicating vital information in a compelling way and reaching the audience. And you think back after the show, what the hell did I just say?
That's
And
so,
so,
that is so true. It's sometimes it's like the more you prepare and the more you have this idea of what you really want to talk about. And that's one of the things I try to do as an interviewer. I go in with a certain idea of what I want to get into, but if it goes in a different direction, that's the improvisation. I mean, that's where the energy, that's where the flow is headed, and not fighting against that. That's a very powerful message. And honestly, I think that it really does apply to all aspects of our lives when you think about expectations versus reality. And we've had that balance. We've been trying to find that balance for a very long time now, because of course the Q operation is just cloaked in mystery for good reason. And we're going to talk about that in a little while. But there have been so many expectations, I think, that folks have had along the way due to the fog of war. I mean, and these are the individuals like you and I that are dialed in, and the audience members. And when things don't go according to our expectations, how do we respond to it? And to me, that is the essence of what that video really was all about. Now, you could sit there and, like you said, I mean, you can fight all day long with forces that you can't control, trying to change them, or you can embrace them. And not, I mean, not necessarily embrace them. Sometimes you may have to, be in contention with these forces, but trying to somehow concoct a separate version of reality where they don't exist. It kind of reminds me of, the struggle going back to where we first started tonight with the hero's journey, trying things that just simply don't work. And eventually you get to a point where you stop fighting reality. You stop looking to change the things that don't conform to the way that you want them to go or you had expected them to go. And I think that's a really big aspect of our spiritual growth. This is something I think that the Patriot community particularly has been really, we've been going through kind of like, a boot camp with that, so to speak, ever since we kind of jumped on board this whole journey, expectations versus reality. It's something that I talk about all the time. It's applicable to all aspects of life. So that was a really great metaphor, and I'm glad that you shared that story. That was incredible.
No, good. I'm glad, because it they should, people should watch that and get the lesson from it. They created something magnificent out of a complete disaster. The audience didn't know what to expect. And I think in the back of Jarrett's mind, the promoter couldn't refund the tickets. I can understand that focus. But Jarrett, I think he was elevated in spirit enough to realize, you know what, let's they're here. Let's give it our best. And there was an audience of people that had no idea what to expect, so they had no expectation. Like many, much like the planet now, they have no expectation. They have no clue what the show, inverted commas, is supposed to look like. So let's just give it our best. Let's do the best we can to help them through this. They're in the audience, and we're here to help them through. And he put on a stellar performance, and we've got to do the same. We have to help. We have to serve the people. That's the last thing to get out of this video for anybody that's in this movement, and they want something. They want to give, and that's the right That's the right perspective. It's not about getting, I can tell you. We must serve. And that this, the more evolved an individual becomes, the more is the desire to serve and the less the desire to take.
That's right.
And that's again, JC, my favorite hero. He gave it all. He left nothing on the table. He gave it all up.
That's right.
And to
And in so
quote,
doing, he left an example for all of us to follow. Indeed.
the best example.
The best.
Yeah, the best example. Who else is there? That's why I keep checking with him. Do I have to put up with this shit? Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I did.
It's so true.
Brilliant.
And get, you know, the fact that Keith Jarrett was able to, like it says in the video, that he would refuse, he kept refusing, "Oh, I can't do this, I can't do this." But then eventually he stopped thinking about I. He stopped thinking about me. And he started thinking about everybody who had shown up there for that concert. And when you do that, it's amazing what happens when you just simply let go of the plan and you allow God to take over. You allow that. I mean, that to me is ultimately what happens. And it's true, because I've done shows, many shows, where I've had, you know, a whole bunch of notes, things, you know, scripted out. Even, you know, early on, I don't really do that anymore, because I learned that people like a raw, honest conversation. They don't mind if if you bumble around for a couple of minutes, or you make a mistake here, you make a mistake there. They know it's honest, they know it's real. And I guess you could say that's our version of improvisation. But, you know, something happens in that, when that energy, when you let go of trying to control and you just embrace the energy, the flow, the spirit of the moment, that's when the Lord comes in and incredible things happen. And I'm sure that you know, the people in the audience had really no expectation, but at some point in the night, they must have realized they were witnessing something special.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, that's incredible. So let's we set an incredible table here to discuss. So I want to pick your brain a little bit, if I could, just about what's going on in the world right now. Because Lord knows there's a lot going on. And you, of course, having a military background, a lieutenant colonel in the special forces, I think have a unique perspective. I would imagine a unique perspective on this military and civilian alliance. And you've actually kind of alluded to it a little bit, even when you're talking about military metaphors not necessarily being all that helpful or applicable to the public, because I think the mindset is just so different. Not having been in the military myself, but from what I've heard, like you said, you're very institutionalized. You're taught that, you know, you need to follow orders. Failure is not an option. You have to press forward no matter what. But this is not something, an attitude that's embraced by your average person out there in the civilian population. And here we are in the midst of this military civilian alliance. And there's so many different voices out there. There's so many different narratives, as you know. And throughout the course of my journey, I've really had to navigate a lot of that, you know, going down different directions, exploring different possibilities. But for me, my anchor is always going back to where I began ultimately on this journey, which was the Q drops. And so I'm kind of curious for you and for your analysis, and even, you know, in terms of speculation about how things are going to go, because that's something that's unavoidable. Do you view the Q drops as kind of an anchor for you? In terms of, you know, you're hearing lots of different things being said in the community, because that's what I tend to do, is I go back to the drops and I think to myself, all right, is that consistent? Is what I'm hearing consistent with what ultimately I believe in as my core, as my anchor? Not that I believe that everything that the Q drops, it's not like biblical in the sense that I take every single word and I hang on it, but, you know, the overall concept. The various different expectations, to throw that word out there again, that Q gave us, that's kind of what I hang my hat on. And I'm curious to hear your perspective on that, because it's been a while since Q has you know, left us with a drop, and certainly since they began. Tell us a little bit about that, and how you see this, what I consider to be a reverse psyop, a positive psyop for the population, how you've seen that play out.
I'll answer this in two ways to describe the role of the Q drops and why it is fundamental to the success of this operation. And then we'll talk about the drops themselves and the way we interacted with or without those. Excuse me. There's two concepts. I put this in Derek Johnson's book. Derek Johnson asked me to put a couple of comments into the book about what was going on. And I focused on two high-level aspects of it, which to my mind helped explain to the people why this was fought the way it was fought and why it was the not only the best way, it was the only way we could guarantee success. Now, two concepts are the center of gravity and OPSEC. Now, center of gravity. The center of gravity at a strategic level, let's go back, at a tactical level. Man, you imagine you're on the ground and you've got a team of soldiers, and you have to dominate an area. You'll find the biggest hill, occupy that biggest hill, and you can dominate the whole area. That's called key terrain. If you occupy key terrain, you have the foundation for success. Now, the smaller hills around it are called, sorry, that's vital ground. The highest hill is called vital ground. You must control it if you're going to succeed in your mission. The smaller little hills around the area are called key terrain. You can occupy all the key terrain, but if you don't hold the vital ground, you're not going to win. So that's a tactical level example of this center of gravity. So vital ground, the biggest hill dominates the whole area, and you can achieve your mission. Now, when you're talking strategic level, the terminology changes, but the idea is the same. It's called the center of gravity. What is that one thing we as an army, we as a division, we as a nation must control and make sure it's protected in order for us to win? Now, in any Western democracy, the center of gravity is the will of the people, the support of the people. So as long as the people are on side, we have the foundation for success. If we don't have the support of the people, this is going to crash and burn badly. Now, I'm not talking tyrannies and dictatorships and monarchies. I'm talking about a country with a democratic tradition. So the will of the people is the center of gravity. So Q had to make sure that the people believed that things were going to go well. Now, they couldn't go making reports to the people saying, "Oh, we've done this and we've found these tunnels and we've cleared these dumps out and here's the adrenochrome manufacturing facility in the Ukraine, so we're now clearing," because you're telling the bad guys. You can't do it. So you move from center of gravity, which is vital, to OPSEC, operational security. So what, and the elegance of this is just extraordinary. What the White Hats did over many decades is they developed this thing. They had to communicate to the people that things were okay, but in such a way that it would be ignored by the enemy, the Black Hats, and lampooned by much, and pushed into such a corner of ridicule that anybody who publicly supported it was laughed at. Now, that's the cover for really important information. So they started the Q drops. Now, and they were quite clever the way they did it too. I'm just genius. But they put the Q drops up, and a few keen intel types, they just had this natural facility to look at clues and they want to put it together. Generally, the autists, and I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, these are the guys who are just so dedicated to piecing this painstakingly together. And so the people were looking at the Q drops and it'd say 11-3. What's that? That's the 3rd of November. So 3rd of November, this is going to happen. The 3rd of November would come and go and nothing happened. Even more ridicule, even more ridicule. And yet there was something in it that the original followers of the Q drops were just so dedicated. No, there's a puzzle here. I know in my heart of hearts, I've got to crack this code. And when it first came out, I was watching going, no clue. And hoping that somebody m could make sense of it. But nobody ever quite did because it just wasn't working. And that was by design. The Q had to be established and then ridiculed to the point of being ignored. Okay. And they achieved that objective. But then there were a few orders that really just stuck with it. And somebody came up with the idea that the numbers weren't dates, they were paragraphs in the Law of War manual. And so there was this a New Zealander, we call them Kiwis. There's this Kiwi, he's called Majestic Eyes, is his handle. And the man's an absolute genius. I mean it. He is next level smart. And he sat there and he connected all the dates, what we thought were dates, to paragraph numbers in Law of War. And all of a sudden it's 11.3 belligerent occupation. And this is going to happen. And you go back to the Q drops. And then all of a sudden this wave of information now made sense. And the information was coming out thick and fast. And people said, brilliant. And so we could make sense of it. And that gave us the center of gravity, the support of the people. They just needed a handful to carry the movement forward. Does that make sense? And now that it's coming out and it is making sense, it's bringing more people back in. People went for it, then they ignored it. They just needed this small cell of how, who knows how many hundreds of thousands that were still pushing this in a population of, 8 billion. They were carrying this idea forward, and now it's coming out again. And so that's the big picture. It had to be done that way. They had to keep the faith, but they couldn't tell us anything out front, and they had to tell us in such a way that we'd look like loons if we mentioned it. And we had to be men and women of such character that we didn't care.
That's right.
Six of stones will, break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And so this small core of people continue to maintain the
type
faith.
Of people who have already been through their own hero's journey.
Bingo. There's that independence required, the ability to say, I'm going my way regardless of the baying of the crowd.
That's right.
And that's why people like you and others, and when I say genuinely heroic, you are, and I mean it. It was on your shoulders that all of this went forward, because the White Hats needed to keep that center of gravity, that support of the people. That is critical. And they had to do it in a very difficult way. And so Majestic Ice put out his work. That went around the world really quickly, and people started making sense of it. Now people are now correctly decoding according to a structure rather than a time frame. Because as we know, it's event-driven. We got it. But now there's a structure. There's that lawful structure underpinning everything that the White Hats are doing, which gives everybody confidence. It's not just another takeover by another globalist organization, because it looks exactly the same. Because you might have heard me talk about Operation Trust during the Bolshevik Revolution. Operation Trust was a plan put out by the Bolsheviks, who were not Russian, by the way. It wasn't a Russian revolution. It was a Bolshevik revolution. Very different. They killed 20 million Russians. Thanks for your time. Brutally and slowly by the group called the Cheka, which were the precursors to the KGB and the rest. The Bolsheviks established Operation Trust, which was a plan to trust us. The white Russians will be fighting the red Russians, so everybody stay out and the good guys will win. Well, that was just a trap to capture all the loyal Russians and execute them. And so people are saying, trust the plan, trust the plan. I said years ago, it's a video online back in 2020 saying, fuck the plan, you are the plan, be the plan. Start doing something. Whatever it is, do it, do something. Don't just sit back and watch.
That's an excellent point to make, by the way, because I think that that's one of the big criticisms that we face with the Q operation is this whole idea that it is a psyop, but just like any tool, it all depends on who's wielding it and what their aim is. And you can have a positive psyop, but it's not a psyop that's designed to get people to sit back and do nothing. As a matter, I mean, that to me is kind of, it's funny when I hear that, because this was the psyop that activated me and millions of other people around the world to be able to, to get dialed in on all this stuff. So, it wasn't necessarily an immediate call to arms. That was never the point. The whole point was for us to play our role as the civilian branch of this alliance. But the idea that it's a psyop designed to get people to do nothing, to me, is just completely it's counterintuitive to even think that way, because especially when you look at the end results of where we are right now. But anyway, go on and continue. I didn't want to derail you there, but I just thought that was an important point to be made, that and because it really bothers me when I hear that, when people say, oh, the Q drops, it's all designed to just, to do essentially what happened during the Bolshevik era. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's an important point to make, because even Mike Flynn was, if you listen carefully to what Mike Flynn was saying, and he's been on the receiving end of a lot of nonsense, and by design, again, by design, they have to undermine everybody, so it destabilizes the black hats. But he was saying, he was consistent. Act locally, get in there, do things. And when he said, of course, Q's a psyop, people, they lost their shit.
Because PSYOP it's got such a negative connotation, right? Because that's what we've been living through, PSYOP, all of these deep state PSYOPs that I think a lot of people can't really wrap their brain around what does a good PSYOP look like. But that's exactly what this is.
Yeah. And special ops use a range of different personnel and in different categories and techniques. You've got conventional warfare, then you've got special operations up here. It's whatever the conventional doing, we don't do. We're constantly ahead. So if they don't have drones, we have drones, and they get drones, then we do something else. We constantly have to be ahead of whatever the conventional force is doing. So we're constantly innovating. And so we use Like Pascal Najat is an excellent example. He describes himself as an irregular, and that's a defined category within our scope of sort of people that we can employ. Let's employ some irregulars. Okay, where we go? You are all irregulars. Every one of you out there. And you say, I've never served in the military. Yeah, you have, and you've been serving for the last few years. And I mean that quite literally, not just metaphorically. You have been serving in this war. And doing God's work, I can tell you, just bloody brilliant. But without you, it wouldn't have worked. So, yes, you and all the other patriots have been serving in the military for the last few years. Just the pay's lousy, but you know, welcome to the army. That's how it works. And they'll take everything from you and give you nothing. But that's service in the military. So I'm not sure they're going to strike a medal and hand it out to you guys. But my God, I tell you what, you deserve some sort of public recognition because you have served as irregulars in this war. And without your effort, it wouldn't have worked. So, center of gravity, support of the people, Q, a very sophisticated method in which to keep the faith alive without letting the bad guys know exactly what the white, what the good guys were up to. And it worked a treat. So that's the big picture of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the Q drops came out, initially, like many people, I tried to follow, and that wasn't my long suit. I was looking at that going, I haven't got time to look at this stuff. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to monitor what's coming out of the Q drops, try to distill from that something useful, that our job is to prepare the people for the next phase. So we're actually out in the field. The Q drops are like the intelligence feed. You go back to the op center and the two shop briefs. You said, sir, okay, this is the latest in your area of operations. We've got this. So I'd go back, try to pick up as much as I can from the Q drops and then go back out metaphorically, back into the field and do what we're doing. So, and that was very, and has been, and is consistently preparing the people for what's coming next. You've heard me say before, the tribulations of war, that's the white hat's job. You know, they don't need us grabbing our 303 Enfield, Lee Enfield rifle and taking people out back at home, because that's going to cause chaos. And so we've been quite disciplined. That was never, we considered it even before we heard about the white hats. You know, do we go kinetic? And we looked at it, and I just did the analysis like we do with everything. And yeah, it would have succeeded. It had it wrong. It would have had a chance of success, but the cost would have been too great and the wounds would never be healed. Civil wars don't ever heal. They just don't. And so we said, no, let them worry about the kinetic aspect. Our job are the great labors of peace, which are far less exciting, but equally important, to dig those foundations to build a country. And I'm talking about Australia now, who's never fought on its own soil for its own liberty. We go fight wars elsewhere. That's fine. But we don't have that imperative, say, like the Americans do, like you do. You have your history. You have your founding fathers. You have your Declaration of Independence. You have the incredible courage of Washington's army. No boots, frozen feet, night before Christmas. They only hung around because Washington asked them to, because their contracts were up, and yet they fought that. They crossed the river and then fought a seminal battle. Now, I understand there's a bigger picture at play and the cabal, and they're all playing with everybody. Got it. But focus on those individual men that did that. It's just incredible stuff.
Yes.
Sorry, that I find that really compelling. I've just lost my train of thought. Where was I going?
Well, we were. Well, we were talking about the military civilian alliance aspect of things, and I think we were, you know, you were
the irregular war.
Not
yeah.
wanting us to pick up rifles and so forth. Civil war.
That's right. So we are involved in the great labors of peace. And so what I did was I continued going back into the op center, getting a brief on the two shop and focusing on what we Australia One's job is, which is to save the country by creating this moral political party. And that was our focus. So we always listened to Q, tried to discern something from it. And if we got nothing from it, because we just didn't have the wit or the understanding, we just moved on and maintained our focus. We just kept going out there and doing our job, you know, traveling the country, the entire country, giving presentations so people can understand what our objectives are and how our job was to build an army here in Australia ready to take over once things change. And this is a nice segue into what you want to talk about. We know something's going to happen. And I've said quite bluntly to the Australian people quite recently, first of all, I've been saying for years, there is no law in this country. We know there is no law. The corporation was taken over and it's completely unlawful. It's a trick to convince us we have a nation state. We don't. And even Mike Flynn, when I spoke to him a couple of years back, he never referred to Australia as a country. He said a territory, a continent. He was being quite coy, but he never mentioned that we were a country and definitely not a nation state. And that's a shock to people because we get the very excited common law people in the freedom who said, oh, look, you know, we've got Magna Carta and Article 61 and we have the right to. And I'm saying there is no law, folks. And when did a piece of parchment ever stop a musket ball?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Have the parchment. Yeah, absolutely. That's wonderful. But man,
hey, we have our Bill of Rights over here, and look what they've done to that.
Correct. Exactly.
It's only the men and women that are willing to stand up and fight for it, you know. But what's written down on paper. But it's the character of the people that ultimately define what people are and what they're not, and what their culture is and what their culture is not. And I've heard you speak brilliantly about that as well, in terms of you know, being able to have the strength of character to make a judgment about what is a good culture versus what is not. But we don't have to deviate there. But I've heard you make some excellent points on that as well.
Yeah, and I used to say, you know, thank goodness for the Second Amendment. Then I realized I was being quite insulting. Thank goodness for the Second Amendment, but thank God for the people who are ready to execute that Second Amendment. That's what saved the world, and I mean it. I think of my mate from U.S. Special Forces in Kuwait, and we were chatting. I said, "How many weapons are you got?" He said, "22. Why do you want one?" It was just, you know, it's that mentality that understands we must be able to defend our sovereignty, otherwise we don't have it. It doesn't exist. It's a nice idea, but you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we went back to always focusing on preparing the people. You have no sovereignty. There is no sovereignty. And by the way, you've lost the right to it. Now, this is a hard thing for me to swallow as a soldier in this country. I find it galling that I have to admit that we have forfeited our right to our sovereignty. And I explained to them quite bluntly. When military steps in, you better sit down, shut up, and just pay attention. Because all of us, allowed this to happen. We collectively allowed our sovereignty to be sold down the river, to have our children's sexual organs cut off in sacrificing their lives on the altar of insanity. We allowed our children to be jabbed. We allowed everything. We gave it away. All these God-given rights for sovereignty, we allowed them to take without a murmur, as long as we could watch the footy on the weekend and drink beer and have barbecues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can tell I'm not a politician because politicians are supposed to unite. Well, I'm not a politician, I'm a soldier. And I'll tell it to them straight. We messed up. We messed up badly. And we have to earn the right to our sovereignty once the military step in, the US-led global alliance. They're not going to hand it back to us because guess what? We don't deserve it. Now, these are hard words for a nation to hear. And I don't care how many people push back. It's the truth. And I would rather have the bitterest truth than the sweetest lie. Because if we start rebuilding our nation on any sort of deception, on any sort of lie, what the ancient Greeks called the noble lie, that we are the elite and we'll lie to the people because they're too stupid to understand. Yeah, no, not happening. And so the ugly truth has to be told to them. Because if we start with the truth and a good idea of what's right and wrong, we have a chance then to prove to those that spent blood and treasure on our behalf that we are worthy of getting it back. Now, this is going to take years. And if people don't like that, I don't much care. This is the truth. If you want smoke blown up your skirt, to use your expression, go turn on, you know, cabal television and get told that you're wonderful. You're not. You dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get back into the preseason mode, get skilled up, get trained. And so that's constantly, despite the cue drops, you know, we're saying, here's our intention, purpose, method, end state. You want to be responsible? Learn what responsibility is. You want to govern your country? Learn what that is. And we've been constantly recommending, you know, Hillsdale College, because they have great education online for the Australians who know nothing about politics or constitutions or governance. And we're advancing that constantly. So, yes, we're aware of the cue drops. We use it as a sort of a bit of an intel feed for ourselves. And we have feeds other than the cue drops, thank goodness, very, very solid, good ones, quite independent, and independent of the US as well. And so we've been in a privileged position to cobble together what Q has said and what our own feeds have said, and then get at least an idea to stay in the right direction, make sure that our... It's not like I get weekly updates from anybody. We don't. But we got to try and stay in there.
Absolutely. Yeah, you cut out for a couple seconds there, but you're talking about staying in the right direction. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I actually think that it's not going to just be the case in Australia. I think it's going to be all over the world. Once the military steps in, there is going to be a period. There has to be a period. Q talks about 10 days of darkness and everything being swift and clean in terms of rounding up all the remaining bad guys, and we can maybe talk about that in a moment. But the idea of being able to reestablish a constitutional republic government, I mean, we're talking about basically it's not even just the government that needs to be completely reformed, and ultimately the source of that power has to be emanate from the people, but it's in every walk of life. It's the economic institutions, the banks, the lawyers, switching over from maritime law into common law, constitutional understanding. There's a complete overhaul that has to happen within every society, and America is included in that. So I happen to believe that we're probably going to see something along the lines of a martial law, quote unquote, takeover for a period, and then probably, I would imagine, at least a few months before new elections can take place, before so the people can kind of absorb everything that they're learning, and essentially to reestablish, to have that Renaissance period of understanding. Because as you point out, it's really all about right and wrong. That's your whole motto. It's about readjusting the moral compass of the entire world. And it's not that people are bad. It's that they've been completely divided and they've been thrown off the scent in a million different ways. There are so many folks out there, as much as we can't stand the fact that they're still normies and they're still asleep, they're not necessarily bad people. They've just been deceived, and they've been deceived at a very deep level. But as you pointed out, there also comes with that a sense of accountability and a sense of responsibility moving forward. You can't just simply say, "Oh, well, I was deceived, but okay, let's just hit the reset button and start over. We're good now." It's gonna be much more involved. It's gonna be something worldwide, and what you described in Australia, I think, is a microcosm of what we're gonna see around the entire world. So, any other comments you wanted to make on that?
Yeah, absolutely, you're on the money. The systems and the complexity of realigning the entire global system, as you say, financial, political, economic, judicial, constabulary, business, union, it's just extraordinary, the job ahead of us. And yet that pales into insignificance in order to educate an entire nation that has never had their sovereignty in their hands before to then say, well, you're sovereign. We believe you are sovereign. That's given you by God. And if you don't believe in God, then stand up and take it and pretend that you just demand it, which you have the right to do. But then you've got people that have never, and we found this in A1, they don't know how to run a meeting. They can't write an agenda. They can't take minutes. Why are we taking minutes? Why do we have to second idea? I don't get this process, say the people. And these are the same people that want to wave a piece of paper saying, I have sovereignty, and they can't run a branch meeting. So A1 has got a lot of on-the-job training and on-the-job experience, just getting people to understand that. Now, how it transitions is going to be fascinating. But an election, yeah, maybe. A transitional team. Now we have, and every country's different because at least we have in Australia, if not an educated, a politically educated people, we have the idea that they have rights. Australians are quite cranky when you step on their rights without even realizing it. But then you have entire countries that have no democratic tradition. They just sit there waiting for orders. And that's the basis to their, China. And people say, don't be nasty about the Chinese. And I get that. I mean, they're just people like us. It's the leadership. Well, it's 1 billion people that sit there and do what they're told without a thought. I'm sorry, but that doesn't engender me with any sort of encouragement. And so you have other countries. The democratic tradition is an impossibility. That's why these silly wars that we fight overseas in trying to introduce democracy to Afghanistan. Oh, God. Yeah, please.
It was really
It's.
about the poppy fields anyway. That was all a lie.
Yeah, we know that. I flew over the poppy fields and I'm looking at them going, yeah, this isn't going to change anytime soon. It's the population. And I mean, I look at Australia, we're fortunate. We're not in a great space, but we're better than most. We have an island continent. We have no contiguous land borders. We don't have that problem. We've got all the resources we need, but we've got this job to raise an entire population to believe that they are sovereign, they have rights, but by God, with those rights come with a responsibility. So you better be ready for the hard yakka, and to move forward. So that's why, for example, one of our main thrusts for some time has been a constitutional convention preceded by a long educative process, so that we actually describe and this and discuss, and we'll be bringing sort of world experts to help us do this, to break down our nine objectives: a moral, sovereign, self-reliant Christian Western democracy, economically powerful, etc. And we'll talk about each one and define it for ourselves, and then we get an idea of what we're trying to create, which will then inform, well, what form of So that's been a focus of ours for some time, and people are really starting to get it. They're actually,
Can I
they're
ask
now
you to
starting.
back up? Can I ask you to back up? You were saying what form of, and then it cut again. So can you
Oh,
back
okay, yeah,
up
sure.
a second?
Yeah, what form of governance do they want? And they have to be able to describe it and understand what its objective is. That's why that end state of ours is so important. So
Yes.
everything contributes to that end state. And it's going to take a few years for people to actually understand it, because it's one thing to wave Magna Carta and say Articles.
Okay, I think we cut out for just a moment there, but I think I got the gist of what you were saying. Are you back with me? All right, I think we cut out again, but I think I got the gist of what you were saying there, talking about the Magna Carta. And ultimately, the Masonic filth, as you commonly refer to them, and I love that. The Masons are builders. All right. And what they've done is they've constructed this false reality all around us. And they have used MK Ultra programming. They've used, fear and trauma based false flags to get the people to a point of complacency, going along just to, it's not so, I mean, there's the social pressure of going along to get along, but there's also this idea of, sacrificing liberties for the general good, for security, and all that stuff that, of course, our founding fathers warned us against. But they're the builders. They're the ones that have constructed this false reality. And I don't think a lot of the time that people fully understand or are fully dialed into this idea that not only are we breaking that down with this military-civilian alliance, I mean, we're doing it from a, an informational standpoint while the military is going in and actually doing the kinetic aspects of what need to be done. But when we get to the other side of that, we have to be the builders. I mean, all the Masons, all the evil people, presumably, hopefully, are going to be gone, taken care of. And then ultimately, it's up to us to rebuild this society. And one of the things that they've done, in addition to the MK Ultra, in addition to, basically getting the general population to be docile, and there's a number of different aspects that go into that, as I'm sure you know from the food and the chemtrails and the million different silent weapons that they use against us, the propaganda, on and on and on. But what they've done is they've created a generation of people who operate from a place of wanting instant gratification, and we still see that to this day, right? I mean, and again, we can't really call it instant gratification at this point in 2024, but it's the same sort of a mentality that we've been, I think, challenged with. We've been sort of tasked in many ways of deconstructing that frame of mind, that ideology where everything has to come when we want it to. And again, it goes back to everything that we've talked about, connecting the dots from the hero's journey, expectations versus reality. But the way that we rebuild our society is going to, our societies around the world is going to ultimately determine how long we have this golden age. And it's like you said, that's one of the things I love about when you describe Australia One and the philosophy and its simplicity. It's so genius because it is a solid foundation. And I think you've been pointing out the various different ways how that foundation Sure, it may at one point, I mean, humanity is we're inherently good, I do believe, but at one point that who knows when it actually started historically, but that foundation started to rot over generations. And you know, we find ourselves here in this moment being, I think the number one goal is staying on course and not losing sight of the ideas that we can't go back to our old way of life. We can't go back to our old way of thinking. It's just like the in the hero's journey, you know, trying things that don't work. We have to completely re-envision what the world is going to look like. And on that basis is ultimately going to be what our future progeny experiences. I really
Correct.
firmly believe that. So
Yeah.
go
And
ahead.
bear in mind that when we achieve this magnificent end state, we are acutely aware that there's a level beyond this again. It's going to change again. This is only this end state we're describing. And I get a lot of pushback from the esoteric types because they think, oh no, it's not woo-woo enough. And I think, yeah, I get you. But we have to actually start from this firm foundation and then evolve into something better beyond it and beyond it again and beyond it. So this end state that we've described isn't the be all and end all of the future of Australia. This is just an interim step. This is a consolidation step, let's call it. So from that, when we have this moral, sovereign, self-reliant nation, we can then start to develop it into something even more glorious and even more glorious. It never ends. This Darwin was wrong. Sorry, it's just flat wrong, and he knew it. But the concept of evolving into something better is real. And so this is an interim consolidating step to tidy up the mess that's been behind us. And then from this, then everyone can then now really start to expand on levels that we haven't described, that their consciousness, their evolution of their soul, their development of a nation, all these higher goals have to start somewhere. And that's what this is all about. So I only say that as a warning to people not to think that we're creating some sort of materialistic where did we drop out?
You were saying materialistic, and then it dropped out for about 10 seconds again. But you were saying we were creating this materialistic, and then the feed cut.
Okay. Yeah, this
Must be a
materialistic.
challenge to have to go back and think about what you said 10 seconds ago repeatedly. I
That's all
apologize.
right. No, don't worry about it. Just do your best with the editing. But this materialistic edifice that every civilization creates, I think they're always reached the zenith of evolution and development, and invariably it's just a stepping stone. And A1 is a stepping stone, and this future we're building is a stepping stone into something grander, more glorious, more fantastic. But I'm sorry, folks, but the mess behind us is so bad. We need to consolidate, get ourselves organized, and then we can step off confidently with a chance of creating the best future we can't even imagine. Our grandchildren will grow a future that we can only dream of.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up about, you know, more esoteric concepts, because while they may be true, you know, for example, you know, the debate about flat Earth versus, you know, the globe and all that. So, you know, I'm one of those people that I say, you know what? I'm not saying it's not important, and I'm not saying the truth isn't going to come out one way or another, but we have, as they say, bigger fish to fry. You know, we have to first make sure that we're not putting the cart before the horse. Like, and I love that, because, you know, where we go one, we go all. It's really about human consciousness. And you actually mentioned that, I think, just a moment ago, that that's really what this is all about. It's about getting everybody at a higher level of consciousness. So then we can, like you said, we can go off in these different areas. We can understand things at a whole different level. But, you know, the awakened community, you see that a lot of the time. And believe me, I don't say this in any way to disrespect anyone, because you may be right about the things that you're talking about, but we have an entire population of people that need to be brought up to speed on things that are a lot more, let's just say, down to earth first, or we can, you know, to rally the people around the truth. People have to be able to embrace the truth, the reality that they live in. I mean, that's something we've been lied to at such a seismic, epic level that we're not going to be able to just simply, explain that to people in an 8-hour movie, you know, or something like that. You know, you've heard these discussions about disclosure, which, you know, who knows how they're actually going to do it. We're all going to find out, I imagine, sooner rather than later. But there are stepping stones, and there's a reason that a journey is one step at a time. You know, it's like I almost imagine it's like you have a flashlight, but you can only see so far off in the distance until you start to take steps in that direction, and then the picture becomes more clear as you move along. I think that's really what we're facing. So, absolutely brilliant commentary there. Let me ask you this: a lot of people have been wondering about, because, you know, I did ask you about the Q drops in a lot of ways to build up to some of the other questions. Who knows if we'll get to all of them today? We probably won't, but hopefully I'll get you back on and we can continue our conversation. But the scare event is something that I think is obviously it's been speculated about for years now. The way that it's referred to in the Q drops is it's scare necessary event. And so I'm curious, first of all, I mean, I know we're going to get into somewhat of speculation here, but philosophically, how do you understand that word necessary? Why do we have to have a scare event, and why is that necessary? In your view.
It's because we've been so demoralized. We no longer are shocked. We are no longer shocked. And we are so complacent, and again, not a criticism, but just an observation of human nature. We are inured to the shocks of life. As long as we get the footy and the beer and the and a barbecue on the weekend, people don't care. That's it. That's why it's necessary. The stories of children being mutilated, tortured, drained of their blood to provide drugs for the elite. Even if they listen to that, and even if they believe, they go, well, it's like a number. It just doesn't make sense. $82 quadrillion. It doesn't make sense. It's not a number you put in your checkbook every week. These aren't concepts that are readily available. It's necessary because they won't wake up. If nothing else, what this has demonstrated to us is that we have been so successfully MK-altered, brainwashed, whatever term you want, that the people are just there, and then they're staring, they're waiting for the next thing. Tell you what to do. Okay, tell me what to do. Okay, tell me what to do. Okay, I'll do it. That's where they are. That's why it's necessary, because and you've heard it a hundred times, if they go to their bank account and there's no money in there, you'll get their attention. Now, proof of that, it just came out in mainstream media in Australia, which is great because we monitor what goes in mainstream, because that's a measure of the reveal. It's coming thicker and faster. But it's just been revealed that in every capital city and some of the major regional centres, our water, our tap water, has dozens of carcinogenic chemicals in it, which the US has declared there is no safe level. Now, you'd expect the next day 25.69 million Australians to be standing up saying, what the hell is going on? Silence. You've just been told your water is poisoned. You are drinking carcinogenic water. Your kids are going to die. And the Australians are sitting there, can I have a meat pie, barbecue sauce? Yeah, thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Necessary? Now, are they ignorant, stupid, imbeciles, brainwashed, victims, all the above? The second part of your question, necessary because whatever follows in whatever form it follows, whatever this transition through military law, through martial law, through to whether the election, we can talk about that down the track, the people have to want it. If it is imposed upon them, it will fail. Because unless, they might even know it's true, but they don't like being made uncomfortable. They have to beg for it. Now, this is a tactic used by the bad guys as well, and that's why this is always dangerous, because people look and say, well, you're doing exactly what the black hats are doing. And the answer is yes, because it works, and yes, because it has to, yes, because the planet will cease to exist. And there are levels above this discussion, which we won't go into today probably, that make this discussion sound pretty rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are bigger forces at play beyond most people's comprehension and capacity to accept. And so they have to be woken up as gently as you can, but woken up nonetheless. And it is necessary because they won't wake. They will sleep in. It's not their fault, but their responsibility to get up. and we're going to help them. And so that's why it's necessary, because that I can't say who, but I can tell you what, there's been not bitter disappointment, but profound disappointment at certain people way up here at the lack of response. Certainly, and I can talk about Australia. Man, we're asleep. Right or wrong, the Brazilians stood up. Right or wrong, the French stood up. Right or wrong, the Canadians stood up. Right or wrong, and Australia turned up, and we did briefly, a couple of million of us in our capital city, but that was about the lockdowns. And once the lockdowns, and we knew what had happened, they'd ratchet back on the lockdowns, and everyone would relax. And I
Right.
said, be careful. It's not about the lockdowns, guys, because they're going to ratchet it back up again and push you. Yeah, poisonous water. All the capital cities, silence from Australia. So that's why it's necessary. That's why they have to be woken up in a,
What do you think is going to get their attention? I mean, let's just focus on Australia. I mean, you did mention people showing up at the bank and having no money in the bank. I mean, we've heard a lot about a black swan event. Certainly, we've got this whole paradigm shift in the on the really in the world stage of the financial system being driven by the BRICS nations, the de-dollarization. We've got, of course, Saudi Arabia, I think, just a couple of days ago said, you know what, we're done with the US dollar. So we can see that there's a massive shift happening there. So a lot of folks are, thinking, maybe that's going to be the ticket that's going to wake folks up. What do you think it's going to take to really wake up your fellow men and women in Australia? I mean, do you think it's going to come down to the money? Do you think it's going to be some sort of I mean, we're also anticipating here, of course, in the United States, we've had this, what looks like the beginning of the narrative to build up to a Cuban Missile Crisis type of situation with Russian subs off the coast of Florida and so forth. I mean, any idea? I mean, we're speculating here, and like, because you've outlined the problem, very, very significant problem. But I'm curious, what do you think the antidote is going to be to getting people to finally just say, you know what, we need to put down the toys and start, putting on our big boy pants and paying attention and becoming a part of this society that we live in. I mean, what's it going to be?
Okay, well, here we are, and we need to get here, and this is the that step that allows control to be taken to start cleaning up the mess. Now, the form we can talk about in a minute, but underpinning that event is the desire for the people. They have to say, please help us, because on its own, money won't be enough. You can empty the bank accounts, and a week later they're full again. People go back straight back to sleep. And so what you're seeing is a series of multi-layered events that are seen to be independent of each other, but what they are building up is a compelling case that will completely collapse faith in the entire system. Because it's one thing to have the money go, but they're going to vote for the same political parties. So you've got to destroy the political parties simultaneous with the money. So they don't have anybody to look to. So that's why in Australia, we're watching the collapse of support by the White Hats very cleverly of the major political parties. And everybody that is even to the least degree unhelpful, they are being exposed, let's say. So again, you see, follow me here. So money goes. Oh, let's get the party that says they're going to restore it. No, we have to the White Hats have to take away that branch, let's say, that's going to pull them out of the river. No, they grab that branch, and that drops, and they're still broke, and they can't go to the parties. Then they look at the businesses, and the businesses are collapsing too, because they're laying off people because they can't, because they're Masonically run, all the cabal run them, and they collapse. And then they go to the religious organizations, and the religious organizations are revealed for what they are. And they can't go to their church. They can't go to their synagogue or mosque because they're now collapsing. Well, they go to the unions. Let's go to the unions. They're always looked after. No, the unions have collapsed because they're just a crook as everybody else. Let's trust the media. No, the media gets revealed as being. So it's a, what you're watching is a slow demolition of every support structure, and it must happen simultaneously, but appear to be independent, if that makes sense. So the people become desperate, and when they reach out, and this is what the bad guys do. When you're drowning, you don't care who pulls you out of the well.
That's right.
You'll take any hand, and that's where they have to be, because that's human nature. Well, that's human nature in the 21st century after years of demoralization by evil. Human nature is glorious and beautiful. It really is. And when we think human nature is anything other than that, what you're looking at is a result of millennia of manipulation and destruction by evil.
That's right.
But that's where you are. And so all of these elements, when they say a scare event, that might be the final trigger, but the ground is being prepared now. So every aspect, the polity, the judiciary, the bureaucracy, the constabulary, the military, media, academia, big business, big unions, every lodge, mosque, synagogue, temple, all gone. You can't, there's nobody there to help you. You must help yourself. And that's the point when you talk about a scare event, that's going to terrify everybody because everyone laughed. You will own nothing and you'll be happy. And everybody went, yeah, right. Really? Well, show me your CD collection. Oh, no, you're on Spotify. You don't own that. They can turn that off in a second. You got ebooks. Where's your copy of the book? Well, no, I've got my ebook. I've got my Kindle. Well, not only can that be deleted at will, it can be edited at will.
That's right.
So you're in there, folks. You own nothing and you're happy. You watch the footy, you listen to the music, everybody owns everything else, and you're sitting back fat, dumb, and happy when all that evaporates. But as I said, it's the progressive destruction of all the support systems in such a way that it looks accidental, it looks uncoordinated. But the reality is, what they want at this point is people going, well, who are you talking to? Nobody. And they're stuck.
Yeah.
They're stuck. There's nobody to grasp. And they look at each other and say, what now? That's the how it manifests is interesting, but not really. And I'm sure the white hats have several options still open, and they're probing a bit like market research. What's going to work here? No, that didn't work. Well, that looks like it's got some potential. We keep that option open. That's a possible workable option. And so they're slowly maneuvering to see, because every nation's very different. And what works in the US just does not work here, and what works here would not work in the US. And so it's an extraordinarily comp the level of complexity is extraordinary. But bit by bit by bit, the support systems have to be weakened. And the moment the people reach for it, there's nothing there. And there's nothing. And I'm laboring the point, but it's important people get it. Try not to look at one thing. The one thing that is important is that people have to get to a point where they say, please help us. They're on their knees begging like children in front of God. Please help us. In which case, then the arm comes down and we get pulled out of the well and we stop drowning. And hopefully they remain polite and humble enough
Well, I was going to say too, to kind of build on that metaphor, it's like you said, when you're in the river and you're drowning and you're flailing around, you're not thinking about the character of the individual who's reaching out with a branch or, throwing you a life raft or anything along those lines. You just want to survive, right? But I think ultimately we need to learn how to swim. That's really what this comes down to. And the only way
Bingo.
learn how to swim is to, as you said, to cry out to God. I really do believe that there's no escaping that. At the end of the day, when all other options are gone, and all of those different life rafts or all those different branches that we would typically reach to are gone, who do we turn to?
Bingo.
Like they say, there's no atheists in the foxholes, right? And
No, you've nailed it. I'm glad you grabbed that. I'm so glad you grabbed it. Because if we stop and this it's And we'll talk about choice later, maybe. But this necessity to decide and to stop asking advice from all the wrong places. Stop it. Go to God. Step one. And that self-reliance, you speak to God, and all of a sudden, the more self-reliant the individual, they won't be fussed on this issue, but it's foundational to us. The more self-reliant the individual, the stronger the country, the weaker the government. I'm happy with that. That's exactly what we're after. We want the government to be terrified of the people, but the people have to be coalesced into this cohesive, consistent mindset of what is right and wrong. Forget the word morality even. We have forgotten. People don't know what right and wrong look like anymore. They have no clue because somebody has told them, yes, it's okay to cut your son's penis off when he's three. Right? So rely on God, rely on yourself, trust no one. Go to the source. Don't waste time with actors. Why are we asking an actor for advice on anything?
Well, it's almost like, yeah, what it reminds me of is going back to the hero's journey chart where you had that realistic insight, and that ultimately propels you to that new understanding, that period of growth where you just take off. And sometimes when you're growing, you don't even really feel like you're growing. You kind of still feel like you're struggling. You still feel like things aren't quite working out. But at the same time, somewhere in the back of your mind and your consciousness, you can feel it. You're growing and really ex at an exponential level. To me, that realistic insight, I can't remember the exact term. I think it was realistic insight that you had on the slide there. To me, it's all about coming to God humbly, because that was my experience, because I realized that there was no way that I was ever going to, in my own personal life, that I was ever going to get myself out of where I was. And it wasn't until I turned to God and I gave myself over and I just said, God, I can't do this. I need you to take over. I need you to give me direction. And I meant it. That was the day my life changed. And suddenly, you know, it led me in a totally different direction, away from this idea that I had to listen to what this person is saying, kind of like what you're describing here, right? I have to listen to that. Well, that person said this is okay. And that person said it's okay to teach, you know, take 5 year olds to drag queen story hour and talk about cutting their genitals off and all of these things. At the end of the day, all of that noise has to go away. And the only way that you really find direction, you find your balance, your core, your baseline, is by going to God. And I think that's really what this scare event is going to be all about. And, you know, it's funny too, because the word necessary, I asked you about, because I always imagined that it had, like so many of the Q drops, has a double meaning. And you really did touch upon this as well. But, you know, it reminds me of something that Chris Miller said. And I'm going to paraphrase here a little bit, but he said that, in addition, of course, to the famous quote that these are the most complex military operations that have ever been undertaken and so forth. With regard to the military coming forward, he said that civil society has to break down, that there has to be, we have to get to a point where law enforcement, the normal institutions and organizations can't handle what's happening. And so the necessary element too, I've often thought of it that way too, is that the White Hats are also communicating that, yes, it's necessary to wake people up, but it's also necessary in order to get, like you said, to get people behind the military, because it goes back to what you were saying before about the center of gravity in the battle, right? You have to have that center of gravity. You have to have the will of the people on your side, because without that, you don't have the ability to ultimately win the war. So I think that's part of the necessity element of it, is that regardless of the degree to which you view this as a pantomime or a scripted movie or kabuki theater, however you want to phrase it, at the end of the day, there has to be a justification, I think, for the military to step forward and to assert themselves to be able to declare martial law. Do you agree with that? Or do you think, I'm off?
No, you're on the money. It's exactly right. There has to be justification. It has to be the logical conclusion in the minds of the people. Mm-hmm. It's exactly right. They've reached out everywhere else, and it's not the actual collapse of society, I don't think, because that's exactly what the Black Hats would love. It's the apparent collapse of society, the apparent collapse of the financial system, the apparent collapse of law and order, the apparent collapse, and they'll just, oh my God, the banks have collapsed. Well, no, we know the banks have been retraining and meeting the Basel 3 and 4 standards for years now. And the ones, the banks that couldn't handle it, have been dropped off the perch, and the others are now moving on. All these elements that have to collapse, it's an apparent collapse, because the safety net, it's like Wile E. Coyote. Instead of dropping 100 feet into the canyon, you drop 6 inches into the net, but the people don't know the net's there. So it's the apparent collapse. Oh my God, I'm about to die. And then, woof, they're okay.
Well, you said, the precipice of destruction. It's that's different than the actual destruction. It's the precipice. Right. It's not, it's giving people a taste. And I'm glad that you made that distinction. But yeah, absolutely. This is a controlled demolition. That the White Hats are backstopping everything in every sector of our society. So yes, we're not going to have actual complete societal breakdown, but there's going to be the simulation.
Yeah, it'll look like it. It'll terrify people. All of a sudden, as I said, the banks are gone. You can't get your money. Every aspect is just the politics has collapsed, blah, blah, blah. But there's a safety net under each one of those. And that's, I'm knowing that the White Hats have to save us as opposed to watch us collapse, it's just logical that that's the manner in which it'll be done.
Absolutely. All right. Well, there's a couple of more points I want to hit. I know we've been going close to 2 hours, so we'll kind of steer it in the direction of kind of winding it down for our first conversation. But I'm already looking forward to our next one. I know that there were a couple more bullet points that you wanted to hit, and then at the end we were going to play a little clip to leave folks with. But before we move on to, because I think you wanted to talk about social proof and conformity, the importance of choice, categorical thinking, make a couple of key points on that. Let me just pick your brain about the election.
Sure.
Because here we are, it's midway June 2024. We're all looking forward to, remember the 5th of November that was immortalized, in V for Vendetta. And it's like people are wondering at this point in time, which direction is this going to go? Because there's been so much speculation about when is the EBS going to happen? When is the Black Swan event going to happen? Is fake Biden going to go the distance for his entire term? Are we going to see an election to bring Donald Trump back? Is that what these last 4 years have been about? How do you see? I mean, I know that there's no way to answer that question definitively, and I always, frame it that way, and just so folks understand, we're speculating here, and it could go in multiple different directions. But I'm curious to hear your gut. What is your gut telling you? As the direction this is going to go.
Okay. First of all, let me just make a mention on 5th of November, and I just quickly checked the date to make sure I was right. 5 November is Guy Fawkes Night. Yes, it's the election, but Guy Fawkes Night, for those of you who don't know your British history, Guy Fawkes famously put explosives under the Houses of Parliament in Britain and with the intention of blowing it up. And I think he'd probably get a lot of support these days for that course of action. Never actually happened. He was captured and it didn't blow up. But that was the basis of what we call in Australia fireworks night or the fireworks, right? Guy Fawkes night. So you'd have fireworks going off and going. And so V for Vendetta, 5th November, Guy Fawkes blowing up the institution, metaphorically, not literally, but metaphorically blowing up the institution. So when Q said that, that was my immediate drop, not the election, but actually to the blowing up of the political institution.
Okay.
Now, sometime last year, somebody asked the question, is there going to be an election? And I said, no, I can't see an election. I think it'll happen way before that. And I've revised my opinion. I think, and this is unpopular, but who knows? This, as you said, this is just opinion. I think this is going to play out longer than we think. Everyone's getting quite toey, and yes, their revelations are coming, but I think there will be an election. If and only because it contributes to the worldwide, and this is critical, the worldwide acceptance of the authority of Donald J. Trump. This is that the will of the people. If there is a legitimate election and he is the president, and I'm going to give you an alternative route to where we need to go, because all the other discussions remain extant, but there's a different route to get there. In the US, because the US is first, the US must look at Trump and say, we want you. And if everybody says, oh, Trump's a troublemaker, you'll have 350 million people saying, shut the hell up. We want him. Now, with that authority, that allows DJT as president, as well as commander in chief. And as you know, there are two separate lines of authority that Derek Johnson, quite intelligent, quite importantly, pointed out to us, but it input behind that was when it was first designed, there was a small group of the founding fathers informed by Washington, the Washingtons, by the way. I'll just expand on that later if you want. The Washingtons quietly informed a couple of key people like John Adams and a couple of others. I think there were three or four, two founding fathers and some very clever lawyers. And they set it up in the Constitution because it was anticipated this set of circumstances might occur, and they had to separate the two. So this was planned way back when. Now, make of that what you will. Now,
Interesting.
to my mind, it is critical that the center of gravity is maintained. The US people are unequivocally, apart from a few crazy leftists, are behind DJT come November. That's the legitimacy that he has as president, as well as what we know to be the lawful position of commander in chief. Then that will be shared across the globe because they are working simultaneously all around the globe. And so when DJT is elected, this is just me forecasting, not accurate. I could be completely wrong, could end tomorrow. But that way, the rest of the world then turns around and says, yes, Donald Trump is the man that we need to save not only the United States, but the world. And we're going to do this together because evil is still here. So the evil is now being revealed, let's say. They need absolute legitimacy. That's the center of gravity. And then what that might allow, and just look at it this way, what that might allow is not a military lockdown where everyone in your houses and if you're on the street, we're going to take you out. But more a case of a revelation of the evil that still exists. Most of it's gone. We know that, but the normies don't know that. And they're still mopping up low level. By low level, I'm talking about state premiers and people like that and state bureaucracies. They're still black hat owned, let's say.
Yeah.
But to a large degree, being informed by white hats, whom they think are black hats, but it starts getting complex. So let's say he gets elected, absolute support nationally and globally, and the picture has been painted between now and November of the evil that has penetrated the earth, not necessarily the degree to which it's been cleaned up, but the evil that's there. And then so bit by bit, they say, you know what, we're going to have to sort this out. So we're going to have this martial law in conjunction with whatever they have as a civil government. It's a possibility. And so we have these elections. The bad people aren't allowed to contest. The good people are. In our case, for example, the method might be, and this is, again, please, it's just speculation, not a forecast. Mm-hmm. Our constitution allows the governor general, who is the representative of the king, notionally, to appoint, without electing them, an executive council for a period of 3 months. So the governor general can sack parliament because they've been unconstitutional. This is quite legal. And appoint an executive council. And they act like a cabinet, basically, you know, defense, treasury, finance, whatever. And they can do what they need to do for 3 months without needing to be elected. And I think they can actually be extended. And so you've got potentially 3 months, 6 months to clean up, let's say in Australia now, clean up the electoral system, which is a priority. And so the electoral roll is sanitized. Problem of non-voters voting. And then on that basis, a government can be elected by the people, which then facilitates the transition and the cleaning up of the country, which still has to occur. I'm not sure how much dropped out then.
It was just a few seconds.
Okay. I think
we're good.
Okay. And so there's a way ahead, certainly for Oz. But in my mind, you're sitting around the table in a planning conference. You've got Army, Navy, Air Force, Special Ops, and a few other, you know, the Submariners, their separate little group, and we're planning something, and you get a chance to voice an opinion as to, you know, why you choose that course of action and justify it. And my vote would be, Sir Eric, when we go for the election, we need to ensure the people know that Trump has the authority of the people. He can act unilaterally. He can act quite aggressively, because they know the state of play, and then the lockdown will be as necessary geographically according to what needs to be done next. So, you know, a police lockdown globally, military lockdown, you can't do it. You just can't do it. Lockdowns, urban warfare, a city, because the terrain is extremely complex. It's not like out in what you call the woods, we call the scrub. You know, trees and hills and rivers and mountains and things. So complex terrain like cities, they just eat soldiers because you'll need divisions just to control one city. Mm-hmm. And they found that in all sorts of conflicts.
That's right.
And so it might be by region, by country, by city, by suburb, and there's this progressive cleaning out. But the justification for that is it'll be like, you know, western suburbs of Sydney, you're in lockdown for the next 48 hours, so stay at home. Don't worry about what's going on. We're just cleaning out some of the bad guys that we told you about last week. Remember that video you saw last week and all the bad guys? Well, we found... It was allegedly because of COVID. The lockdowns happened. There is a precedent for this. This area lockdown, according to need, because during COVID there were major lockdowns in areas, and people said, and it was the police were there. And they had barriers up, and you couldn't drive through that cross city tunnel or whatever. And it was down to COVID and other things. But it was really when the dumps were being cleaned out. And you see what I mean?
Yep.
They've tested this process. They locked down the area. People went, yeah, okay, there's a good reason for it, no problem. But now the reason might be there's bad guys down there and we're going to clean them out. So just stay home the next 48 hours, and then you might see vehicles go past your window. Don't worry about it too much. All good. Yeah. And then they go back to their normal life. So there's an alternative approach to this global, you know, men in black with MP4s at the front door. If you step out, we're going to blow your head off.
Mm-hmm.
There just aren't enough troops on the planet to do it. And so that's, I just paint that picture to give people an alternative which shatters everybody. They all go into psychotic shock and they're cutting their wrists. No, I think the White Hats are far more sophisticated and far more thoughtful about it. So I see it taking longer than you think. Yes, the truth is going to come out and it's going to be horrific because they're going to prepare the ground in order then to, after DJT gets elected and after he has the legitimacy, not only in the US, but globally, that we are now going to clean up these terrible people for all the things they've done here. And then they'll start playing videos of trials of people that we know already been taken out. But they start getting played, and the people go, "Oh, good, you know, Hillary's gone and Fauci's gone, and that's great. Did you watch last night? What's it? That all happened years ago. We know it, but that's it. Doesn't matter. They don't need to know that. What they see will meet their psychological needs because there's no point saving the planet if 8 billion people commit suicide because it's all too much to take. Does that make sense? So that's
Absolutely.
just my gut. My gut is it's going to be a bit slower, but still happen quite effectively. Nobody gets away. No, don't worry about that. Everyone's going down this time.
Yeah,
Because
absolutely.
that's the stuff. That's
Yeah,
an alternative future that I can see being played out that way.
I have to agree with you in a sense because, you know, I've been doing the same thing, speculating all this time and thinking that we were going to have intervention prior, even going back to 2022 before the midterms in the US. I thought we were going to have military intervention that was going to stop that from going forward, that we were just going to get a little taste of the tyranny. But the longer it goes on, and the closer we get to the election. Now, don't get me wrong. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that, you know, the EBS goes off tomorrow. I mean, whatever let's put it this way. Obviously, I want it to be done right. And that's the most important thing. It has to be done right with the, you know, minimal amount of casualties, minimal amount of chaos and confusion and all of those things. And of course, protecting the overall mass consciousness in the process. I want it done right. But secondarily, I want it done as fast as possible, just like everybody else. But I think I'm starting to see more and more as we get closer to the election. At one point, I wouldn't even entertain that. I mean, going even back last year in 2023, I was like, no, we have to have something's got to happen before the election. I think that was pretty much the conventional wisdom. And you've been engaged in this process, and you've been on the circuit as well, and it's for me, it's hard to recall anyone who has said that we were going to go the distance and that we were going to really see, you know, 4 full years of a fake presidency, and it was really going to come down to the wire. And I think also what's kind of brilliant about the White Hat strategy is at this point in time, like I said, we're halfway through June, halfway through 2024 already. It's amazing. And yet
Madness.
everything is still on the table. All of these different options are still on the table. I mean, we could have the EBS could go off 5 minutes from now. We could have the deep state try to steal the election again, and that maybe would force the hand of the military to come forward. We could have a legitimate election like you described, where Trump, you know, gets back into power. I mean, there's so many different ways that it could go. And even at this late stage of the game, they're keeping everybody guessing. I think that's really, you know, it's a tribute to the genius of the plan. So as we start,
Absolutely. I
as we
absolutely agree.
okay, sorry, yeah. I mean, it's really just incredible because I'm an analytical thinker. I know you are as well. And the most brilliant minds in the world have been trying to figure out this plan, and nobody's been able to crack the code, right? And that's like you talked about. I mean, there is an element of AI, excuse me, that is my understanding is that the Q drops have been augmented by AI, not driven by AI. And that's a very important distinction to make, that they're not just simply listening to what the AI is telling them and going, you know, taking the computer's direction, but they're augmenting the drops and the timing and everything and all the deltas and so forth with the AI. But it's just brilliant. When I sit back sometimes and I think about this strategy and this plan, how they're saving the world largely peacefully. Like you said, 8 billion people on the planet. And you can only imagine what would have happened if, you know, if Trump hadn't been elected. Of course, that's a whole different story there. But you know, it was going to be a hot coup in the United States. They really weren't going to have any other choice because they knew the direction they were leading us was absolute hell on earth. And the way that they've been able to prevent that from happening, and yet keep everybody guessing at the same time. And yes, we're all suffering. And I remind my audience of this, I mean, all the time. I'm not immune to suffering. I'm not immune to the same feelings that they're having day in and day out. But the reality of the matter is that most people, I would say pretty much everybody, still has access to the basic necessities of life. They're still able to, you know, to tuck their kids in at night and give, you know, take them to school the next day and be able to get groceries and be able to go on living. And you just take a moment to think about if this had gone kinetic, if this had gone in a different direction, like you're saying, if it all went to custard on us, where would we be right now? And that's also something I think that's important for us to remember. So as we kind of wind this down a little bit, I wanted to kind of pass it back over to you to, yeah, and you can pick and choose. I'm not sure how in depth you want to go on these topics, but you had talked about social proofs and conformity, the importance of choice. You also had mentioned during our pre-recording conversation, categorical thinking, the challenges moving forward. So I was going to offer you the opportunity to speak on either one of those topics before we wind things down.
I'd actually, you know what, because this has been such a great show, and I mean, it's been a lot of fun, a lot of good information. I'd like to save that for the next one.
Sure, okay.
Because those topics require a depth of discussion to really, to paint the picture so people can get it viscerally and then move forward. So let's save that for the next one, because I'm looking forward to the next one, mate. This has been great. What I would like to do, though, if the last thing we do is put on Sam Adams, the comedian. Sure. Because, and the reason I think that's important, apart from the message that he has, I want to make this guy world famous. He is such a, and you'll know why at the end of the, you see his bit. This guy should be out there explaining solutions to problems to the world. He's a genius who speaks in a gentle, mellifluous voice, and you just can't help but love the man. So I want to put that up. But more importantly, the topic of the discussion is so foundational to moving forward. And it's a very hot topic in the US, and you're victims of it certainly more than Australia. We don't have the same problem. I won't touch on it yet, but you do. And the sooner, and you are coming together as a country, as a nation, as a people, as an idea, the idea of America, how brilliant is that? We pray for you because you're leading the way. Without the US and without the good people of the US, the world would have been lost. And that's a statement of fact. And I say to the Australians all the time. That's not an open.
I paused the recording there. We had a longer than usual pause there, but you were just talking about how, you know, if the United States falls, the rest of the free world goes with it, and then you cut out.
Yeah, absolutely. If not for the US, the world would have gone into 1,000 years of darkness. And again, not an overstatement. And it's a debt. I tell the Australian people all the time, we owe the United States and the people of the United States. We owe you a debt of gratitude we'll never be able to repay, but one we will always remember forever. And that's it. But having said that, yeah, we're finished with Sam Adams.
Sure,
and
yeah,
and then you can close out, and then we'll set up the next one. And I can't wait, mate. This has been fun.
This has been fun. I knew it. You know, my audience was telling me you got to get Ricardo Bossi on this. They were saying Bossi, but it's Bossi. But I think you're a boss, so I'm just going to say Bossi. But they've been telling me for a while, like, you got to hook up with Ricardo, and we finally did it, and I knew it was going to be great. So yeah, let's go ahead and let's put an end cap on this, and we'll wrap it up, and then we'll look forward to the next one soon.
Okay.
It's a wonderful place to be, Provo, Utah. I looked you up on Wikipedia.
said 0.0004%. It's a wonderful place to be, Provo, Utah.
Sorry, go back. You'll have to pause, mate. There was a...
Okay, hold on.
It's a wonderful place to be, Provo, Utah. I looked you up on Wikipedia. Said 0.0004% African American. I said, wow, is that even a whole brother? On a double axle. No, it's nice to be here, and look, let's just have fun. I think we all have a right to laugh. You know, people get angry and upset about so many things, and sometimes you just need to laugh about things. Find a reason to laugh about things. I make a joke about race. Find a reason to laugh about it. No sense in getting mad, sad, angry, upset. You know, when I talk about race, it's funny to me. It is. Think about it. If somebody's dark like me, we say black. If somebody's light, we say white. Think about this. This is the two blandest colors in a crayon box. That's what we use to describe ourselves, right? I was thinking about this. I was doing a show in Nebraska. Hershey, Nebraska. Go figure. Population 560. You know you're in a small town when all the businesses begin with the word the. I'm driving through, there's the bank, the store, the jail. My gig was at the bar. When I walked in, I realized that the town's name was Hershey, but they hadn't seen chocolate before until I showed them. But they were nice people. And it was funny because at the end of the show, a lady came up. She said, can I take a picture with you? And I was like, sure. So, you know, she handed somebody her phone and we posed and I put my arm around her. And just when they were getting ready to take the picture, she looked up and said, I've never been this close to a black man before. It was lightning, she white. We all have a true color. Like when the government does the census report, every 10 years they ask a bunch of questions. One of the questions is race. The first box to check in that category is for white. Now the second box, my race. They have multiple choices. Black, comma, African American, comma, Negro, comma, running back, comma, rapper. But they had a little box to write something in. And that write-in box is what made me decide to find my true color. Now, how do you do that? Go to a hardware store. Go in the paint section. Grab those little paint chips. It took me about 15 minutes, but I found my true color. If you say I'm black, I'm not mad. That's not racist. I'm not offended. I'm just telling you all here in Provo, Utah, I know my true color. I'm a shade of brown called chocolate indulgence. Hello. Shades of chocolate indulgence. All you people have been told you're white. You're not white. You're a shade of paint called papaya smoothie. I looked it up. So, I know it's silly, but it's funny. And that's why you gotta find a reason to laugh. So find your true color and then report it to the government. Let them know what color you really are. You might be papaya smoothie, you might be rosy coat. I don't know. But report it. When they see that we have so many different colors, we're not just black and white like they labeled us, maybe they'll stop asking us what color we are. They'll find some much more important things in the world to solve, okay? Fine.
Boom. That was great.
Yeah, it's
we missed a couple little segments there, but I'll piece it together. But that was fantastic. What a great note to end on. Go ahead.
We actually did that. The family and I, we went to the hardware store, and because we saw I showed the girls the video. We laughed, and so we're up there literally doing this, and people wandering past this family checking their true color. And what do you think I am? Am I that? Yeah, that's close enough. And it was just apparently what's happened is people saw that video of his, and millions around the world did exactly that. And it's such a clever device for shifting deeply ingrained division so effectively. And that's why I love it. It's just such a brilliant little idea. So anyway,
That was absolutely amazing. And I think ultimately that's where we're headed. You know, I mean, he's doing it through comedy, but the walls of division need to be dissolved. And, you know, that's the way, you know, I was asking, I was doing an interview recently. I asked the person, you know, how do you define victory in this war? And to me, I mean, there's the obvious, we have to have justice. We have to have disclosure. We have to know the truth. But really the big goal, the big prize, as far as I'm concerned, isn't vindication. It's healing that division. And, you know, there's so many different ways to do that. And that gentleman, his name's Sam Adams, right?
Yeah.
He's doing it through humor. And it's actually, you know, comedy is one of the few ways that you can actually still speak the truth and get away with it. But, you know, I think it's brilliant in the sense that not only was his message great, but it's also an example of how each one of us are going to be using our unique talents, our unique God-given abilities to dissolve all of that division. Because when we unify, it's like Donald Trump said, he's talking in the context of America, saying when the American people are united, they're absolutely unstoppable. But think about that on the world stage. And that's truly where I believe we're headed. So, Lieutenant Colonel Ricardo Bosi, this has been an incredible interview. Like you said, I mean, I'm already looking forward to the next one. I'm so happy that we got a chance to sit down. And I'm even more happy that we had a great rapport. We felt it just instantly. We had this connection. Yeah. So I'm just, you know, I'm in a really great place right now spiritually. I just want to, you know, thank God, you know, for where we're at right now. Thank God for this journey. Thank God for bringing us together. So many great people that I've had the opportunity to speak to, and you're definitely one of the highlights. I can't wait to have you back on again. So before we part ways, I'm going to put all of your links and any pertinent information in the description, but what can you tell folks about where to find more information about Australia One, your Rumble channel, any platforms you're on, any information you want to leave with the audience? And then we will we'll wrap it up until the next time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. It's been an absolute privilege. And as I said, it's been fun and informative and helpful, because it's got to be helpful. We've got to serve the people. Everything you do must serve the people. That's the final metric. Looking forward to the second one. In the meantime, please go to www.australianoneparty.com. You got to put the www in, because it's changed recently. That's it, www.australianoneparty.com. You'll see all our social media links at the website. And go to Rumble, Australia One Party. And we have countless, and I mean countless videos. We've been doing this for a long time now, for many years, hundreds of videos, thousands of hours. Of good information and background. And if you see me in a video losing it and using very soldierly language, I do that occasionally. Please forgive me. But sometimes the truth, as Mark Twain once said, cursing provides relief, even denied prayer. And so we've certainly got to that point in this journey. And now, funnily enough, it's actually... the cursing is diminished, because we now have a better understanding that we're going to be okay, and that we're in good hands. And finally, always trust God, because he doesn't mess up. So thanks, and we'll see you next time.
All right, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Ricardo Bosi, hope you guys enjoyed this one. I'll be back with another report soon. Until then, God bless and Godspeed. Patriot out.